This is PFW in Progress.
What they bring us today, you're going to fit in real good. You'll learn the rules. It's all up to you. I can be a good guy, or I can be one real mean son bitch. It's all up to you.
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
Them clothes got laundry numbers on them. You remember your number and always wear the ones that has your number. Any man forgets his number, spends the night in the box. These here spoons you keep with you. Any man loses his spoon, spends the night in the box. No playing grab ass or fighting in the building. You got a grudge against another man, you fight him Saturday afternoon. Any man playing grab ass or fighting in the building spends the night in the box. Any man don't bring back his empty pop bottle spends the night in the box. Any man loud talking spends the night in the box. You got questions? You come to me.
Paul Perillo.
Hell, I seen him eat 10 chocolate bars and 7 cold drinks in 15 minutes. He can eat busted bottles and rusty nails, any damn thing.
I can eat 50 eggs.
Nobody can eat 50 eggs.
You just said he could eat anything.
My boy says he can eat 50 eggs, he can eat 50 eggs.
And Andy. And Andy?
I'm shaking it here, boss. I'm shaking it.
Andy Hart.
We going by my house and we going to have a big meal. Then I'm going to show you a couple of farm girls that really knows what for.
Some guy named Tom.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach. So you get what we had here last week, which is the way he wants. Well, he gets.
PFW in Progress.
What we got here is a failure to communicate.
All right. Communicating with you now is Fred and Tom back here with PFW in Progress on a Friday. And we're ready to take on everything that is Patriot. Right, Tom?
That's right.
Maybe a little college, too, because you're coming off a big win last night. Rutgers over, yeah. Over Louisville. You called that one, right?
Yeah, I'm Mr.
He called
Big
that 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm Mr. Big East. I said Louisville would beat. I said they'd struggle with Cincinnati. Cincinnati took them down to the gun. I said Louisville would beat West Virginia, then lose to Rutgers. Now I'm telling you, watch out, Rutgers for Cincinnati. They're tough at home, you know, coming off this big win. Look out.
Okay. All right. So, little college update, but of course, this is the Patriots, and the email address is webradio@patriots.com. It's webradio@patriots.com, and Bill had his press conference today. I thought he started off a little bit dour, but I think he got into a pretty good mood talking about Burt Jones.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. When you're talking about nothing that matters, he gets all excited because it's not about the team. You know, if you have to talk about, like, the issues and the team, he doesn't want to talk.
Well, he doesn't want to talk about the Patriots.
But if you talk about Burt Jones, you know, he can't wait to talk about him. Talking about throwing spirals behind his neck.
I thought that was
neck.
Pretty
yeah.
interesting, you know?
Yeah. Burt Jones, I consider to be in the same category with Billy Sims because they were both phenomenal players that suffered injuries at the time. Hurt their careers, but if they had them now, they'd be back in a week. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, those were two very good players that don't really get the recognition because their careers were cut short. But if you look back now, if they had those injuries today, they would just miss a little time.
That's the first thing I was thinking about when Belichick was, they'd be back playing today.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What else? Locker room isn't open till 1:30.
You got it.
Okay,
now.
On Friday. couple things in the Herald today talking about Corey Dillon.
Being a team player.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's what was the news there? I mean, they had a big thing in the back cover, anger management. So your first thing in your mind is, Corey Dillon, anger management, what's going on? And then it turns out he's being a team player.
As Michael Felger said today, and I think fans should know this, the writers don't do that.
No, I
they
know.
Don't, you know, and sometimes they'll get a bad rap because of what happens on the covers and stuff. They don't even do the headlines.
I know.
So, you know, just keep that in mind. The Herald has anger management. Then you open it up, and it's pretty much a story saying Corey Dillon should be in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
I mean, that's basically what it said.
So, I mean, that was I think a little misleading there. You know, whoever it was, but
the Post.
So there's
no news there. The New York Post does the same thing.
Oh, I know.
You get this huge headline. You open it up, and you're like, "What? This story has nothing to do with."
Well, it's not just these tabloid newspapers. It's the tabloid news shows on TV.
Oh, I mean,
you'll be watching a show at 10 o'clock, and Channel 7 will be like, "Cure for baldness? check it out on right. 7 at 11, and then you get to the thing, and you're like, I'm down with that, and it's like, no, there is no cure for
ballers. I'll even be more simple than that. Sports Center.
Yeah.
They do it all the time, you know. T.O. running the tuna out of Dallas, stay tuned, and it's just someone's opinion that T.O. is going to run the tuna out of, right. You know what I mean? It's right. No news.
Right, right. So we have to, as fans, kind of sift through all that garbage.
It's tough now with the internet and the 24-hour news shows and everything. It's really difficult.
But the real news is that the Patriots are playing the Jets on Sunday, and, of course, Rodney Harrison won't be playing. Actually, is he the first guy listed out this season on the Patriots?
Ever?
Well, at least this season. Other than that, I guess, you know, Chad Scott and Artrell Hawkins are going to have to pick up the slack mm-hmm. there. Do you think this guy that they brought in off the street might contribute right away? Is he going to be a little...
No, I got to be honest with you. I don't know anything about him, but just reading the press release and everything, he looks more like a replacement for Antoine Span on special teams and a body for depth. Like we were talking right. on the roster report that they really only have two corners. If Chad Scott goes to safety...
well, unless
Samuel
Wilson comes back.
Right, if Wilson's out.
Yeah.
So... while they can address that as the year goes on, if someone gets injured during a game and
right.
Wilson isn't playing, that yeah. you know that could be tough. So that guy's probably just an extra body.
Welcome, in case Troy Brown.
Troy Brown, Chad Scott has to move back over
right,
the corner.
Right, right. So going into this game, other than that, I think the defense is pretty well set, except for the defensive backfield. We know that the Jets have had some big plays this year, so you can imagine that they're going to be playing everything in front of them, forcing Pennington to work the ball downfield. You know,
well, Pennington's play has declined steadily since that last Patriots game.
Yeah,
you know, it's Bill's been talking about how great a year he's having. Well, he kind of started off, you know, quickly, and he's kind of declined since. And I think a lot of it has to do with a young offensive line, you know, and it's the Jets are probably a 500 football team. They're 4-4 now. They'll probably finish 8-8. And, you know, they're going to play like that. One week they'll probably look good. One week they'll probably look bad. And,
right.
you know, and I think they'll be able to pressure Pennington. I think they can force them into mistakes. Weather could play a factor into this game.
Why? What are they saying now?
Well, heavy rains late in the afternoon. I don't know. You know how fronts move. You don't know
yeah.
if it's going to get here quicker or later.
Right, right.
And they on the way in today, I heard late Sunday, starting late afternoon, heavy rains.
Well, thank goodness the Revolution's playing in Houston.
Yep.
Because we wouldn't want that affect their game. And I'll be that starts at 3:30 on ABC. So if anybody, you know, if the Patriots, once they start blowing out the Jets, if you want them, move over to ABC and watch The Revolution, you're allowed to do that.
And available on WRKO.
Yes. That's the only reason you'd be allowed to turn away early from the Patriots is to watch The Revolution on Sunday.
Yeah, you think, what kind of game you think this is going to be? It's
Well, I think Twelman will come out.
Nil-nil.
Oh, you're talking about the Revs or the Patriots?
What do you think I'm talking about?
Holy
you think
kid.
I'm ever talking about the Revs?
I'm only kidding.
Good goalkeeping with the Revs,
yeah,
I think.
Mike Reese should have a solid game.
Matt.
No,
Mike Reese used to work for you. Matt Reese is the keeper.
Oh, right.
Well, I thought Mike Reese still worked for him.
Oh, ba-dum-boom. Boom. No, seriously, the Patriots game, I was thinking about that. What kind of game do I think it'll be? You know, and you look at last game, and you know that the Patriots have heard all this criticism about abandoning the run too early and not using Maroney enough and, you know, now all the talk about Dylan. And so you think, oh, you know, they'll come out and they'll just pound the ball. I would never, ever say that with the Patriots. You know, they're going to take what the Jets give them. That's the kind of team they are.
Jets defense pretty much gives you anything.
Well, that's the thing.
Like I wrote in my preview story, they're kind of an equal opportunity
yeah.
defense. You can pass or throw on.
Right. You know, so I just think they'll be a balanced team this week. That's all they need to do. I think you might see a little bit more Maroney this week. I don't know. You know, one thing that worries me is, you know, all this criticism about, you know, not using Maroney a lot in the second half, and now he's on the injury report is questionable with an ankle. Could he had actually have been hurt in that
Maybe.
Game, and that's why, and they're just not saying it?
Maybe, because you know they would never would.
Right.
You know, they wouldn't say, well, you know why he was hurt. It's, you know, let's put it this way. Rodney Harrison has a broken shoulder blade. His return to that game was probable.
Right.
And he might not play.
He wasn't even on the bench.
He might not play until the playoffs, and his return to that game was probable. So,
right.
you know, you might be right. Maybe he did get injured. And
that's why they didn't use him
yeah.
a lot. So I don't know, but I do think they'll probably be a balanced team on offense. I think, of course, Brady will, you know, he'll bounce back.
Yeah,
he'll never have a bad game two in a row, like he did.
But I'm still disappointed in the fans. You know, I was listening.
Oh well, speaking of that, go ahead. But that reminded me of something. Go
ahead. You can go first.
Well, I was watching Four Downs with Felger.
Well, I was listening to the Mike Felger show, so maybe we're talking about the same thing.
And they were talking to Don Banks, who's with Sports Illustrated, who goes to a lot of different games, and you know, he said that the Gillette Stadium is the quietest stadium in the league. And that
it is. I wish the fans don't argue it. It is. Trust us. We go all over the place.
He says Patriots, New England fans wait for something good to happen before they start getting loud. Whereas other fans, like, you know, Pittsburgh,
Kansas City, you can't hear yourself think throughout the whole game.
They make it a point to be loud
before
to make something happen. The Patriots wait for something happen. The Patriots fans, it's a difference. It's proactive versus reactive. And the Patriots fans are reactive fans. And in my mind, I know Paul's going to argue with me, and maybe some of our listeners will argue with me. I don't think that's being a good fan. And, you know, fine, if that's where you want to be, fine. But don't go around saying how New England's Boston sports fans are the best sports fans.
Right.
To me, being the best sports fans are knowing what to do at a football game.
Exactly.
You know, and I'm sorry. That's what it is.
And my point, Fred, would be this. Let's take three cities, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, and New England, okay? Why is it so much different watching a game in Kansas City and Pittsburgh than it is here? You know, and it's way different. I don't want to hear about the configurations of the stadium.
Right.
The Pittsburgh stadium's open on the end, too.
Pittsburgh Stadium was built by the same people who built this stadium, and they have one end that it's almost identical.
Exactly.
And I would even argue there's less people in their south end zone or whatever direction of the compass it's pointing than in that same end zone on our, because their plaza's much bigger. On that side, it's much more open than ours, and there's less people there than in ours. It's the river-facing side.
Right. Just trust us from the people who have gone to different stadiums. You couldn't get any quieter if you possibly tried in this stadium.
Yeah.
You really can't.
I mean, the beginning of the Colts game, people were up, you know, because it was the beginning of the game. The Sunday night game was pretty loud, but it went away.
It's just, you know what it reminds me of? The Brewski thing. There's this lot, you know, at the beginning, when Brewski came back, it was like this big thunderous, and then it just dies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, even if it's a big, important game, it's loud at the beginning, then it kind of levels off.
They don't sustain it. You know, and who was it? Russ Francis maybe was saying that there's just too many things to do at Gillette Stadium because maybe they need to go back to old Schaefer Stadium where the only thing you could do is go to the men's room and watch football.
Well, what do you mean too many things? Stadiums are like that.
I know. But the concessions and things to look at. And
You know what? If it's 3rd and 8 in the Colts game and you're getting a hot dog, go home.
Right.
Go home and watch the game on TV.
Exactly. Exactly.
You get a hot dog.
So I'm not buying
halftime.
That either. I'm not it's, buying that
no,
either.
No.
You know, it's
enough
just,
excuses.
It's, you know, it's always been that way. And, you know, even, you know, they say Foxborough Stadium. It was the same at Foxborough Stadium. People forget. All we remember now of Foxborough Stadium is the Fog Bowl in the Snow Bowl. That's all we can remember, really. But I was a season ticket holder. Those fans stunk. You know, half of them were too drunk to even be involved in the game. And they weren't.
Sorry about that.
They aren't proactive fans.
Right. No, you're right.
And, you know, in Gary's defense, you don't need music.
No.
You don't need someone telling you to be loud.
We got an Ask PFW saying they didn't like the new song because they didn't know when to get up and cheer. And I said to Andy and Paul, that's the stupidest email I've gotten since we've been here. You don't know when to get up and cheer? You need Gary? Gary, why don't you, like, have, like, on the scoreboard, like, get up and cheer?
Well, you're not allowed to, unfortunately.
There are so many NFL rules that prohibit you from that.
Right.
That have changed since when I started up until now, including when you can play music and all that. And the only song that does it to him is Welcome to the Jungle. It's like Pavlov Dog. That's the only song they'll get up for.
When we were at Foxborough Stadium, Gary.
It's like, oh yeah, that's right. This song, we have to yell.
You used to play the Braveheart thing on Foxborough Stadium, and that worked. You know, cause he'd get up there and he'd go, and everybody would go, and that worked. But the NFL told us we had to stop. It was 10 grand the first time you do it.
Oh, hi ho, 50.
50 grand. You know, every
time.
You're not allowed to do noise-inducing
to incite the crowd. No video
or announcements or anything that would, you know, tell the crowd what to do. Now the Chiefs, they're on the borderline because, you know, they do a thing where every time there's a false start, you know, they'll put it on the board. Okay, fan, you know, I forget what they call it, but they give the credit to the fan every time there's a false start, and they, it's like, you know, the K's in baseball for strikeouts. They keep track of it at Kansas City. But those fans know what they're doing.
Yeah,
you know, that's,
but that just goes back to why I'd rather watch college football than pro. I mean, you can't have the fans this, you know what? I don't like the NFL.
Oh, come on.
I don't. Not the business part. I'm sick and tired of all their stupid crap. You know, give me a okay, Fred, you're high up. You're higher up than me. Tell me why they can't have the fans cheer loud. Give me a reason why Gary can't play Braveheart. If you give me a good reason, I'll shut up.
Well, I mean, it's the whole unfair advantage thing where I know there's supposed to be a home field advantage, but they consider it, what do they call it?
Inciting the crowd.
Inciting the crowd, but there's another thing that I've heard them talk about it. It's not a natural thing.
Now, you're an intelligent man. You read books. Are you telling me that makes any kind of sense whatsoever?
Well, I guess, you know, they just want to – one of the things about the NFL is they hate gray areas. They try not – you know, whether it's these official rules that drive Paul crazy, the on-field – they try whenever they can to not create any gray areas. So let's say you allow Braveheart. You allow videos, okay? Well, you know one team's going to take that and do something different with it. You know, they're going to put speakers near the you know, too close to the field. They hate – they don't want to have any gray areas.
But what does playing
areas.
Braveheart have to do with putting speakers too close to the field?
Because it's if one team does that, then another team will think of something else that's better. Then another team will think, you know, and then the next thing you know, you got huge speakers on the end zones pumping in crowd noise, which is against the rules as well.
I just don't see how that's the same.
You know, Atlanta, I think, in the Colts have been accused of pumping in crowd noise through the speakers.
Tom, remember a couple of years ago, I think it was the Rams at New Orleans. And they were playing the music so loud that you couldn't hear anything.
Yeah.
I think that's where this all stemmed from.
Oh, all right.
I mean, they have these reasons.
Talking about being reactionary. Yeah, the NFL is the king of being reactionary.
And sometimes they go over the – just to not have any loopholes. But, you know, there's always – you know, the injury report is a perfect example. You know, they keep trying to get that right, and they just can't because you're dealing with uncertainties. You know – my hurt is not the same as your hurt, and Belichick plays on that. He knows that. That's the case. You can never say that he's not telling the truth.
No.
You can't.
Right.
He doesn't know. You know? Some angel could come down tomorrow and touch Rodney Harrison in the shoulder, and he'd be ready to play next week. You know, so.
Well, we know Rodney's hurt because he's listed as out. So
right.
He's really hurt.
But you just don't know. You know, so it's I don't know. But going back to what we're talking about as far as, you know, the fans and all that.
Well, you went in a different direction. My disappointment was because I was listening to Felger's show, and people are still blaming Brady. Listen, those guys weren't open. Rashay Caldwell is a borderline NFL receiver. Doug Gabriel is a borderline NFL receiver. In big games, you give Brady borderline NFL receivers that he's not used to, and you're going to get what you saw. I'm sorry. I just find it odd that we're blaming Tom Brady and not the receivers who are borderline NFL caliber players.
One thing, I think they're good receivers. However, one thing that the Patriots receiving core is lacking
they're
right
good.
Now.
Why are they good?
I think they're good. They're good NFL receivers.
They haven't done anything in their careers
Listen to me. Listen to me. You going to listen to me?
Yeah, go ahead. Don't say that they're good because they've never proven anything.
When Doug Gabriel came here, you almost fell off your chair.
I like Doug Gabriel, but he is what he is.
Okay.
Let me use a
That's
Belichick.
What I'm saying, all right? They're serviceable NFL receivers.
That I'll accept.
Okay. What they're lacking in their receiving core, and I'm going to even throw Chad Jackson in there, is someone who's quick, a possession-type route runner who just gets open because of his quickness.
Right. And they're not getting open quickly.
Right. Caldwell and Gabriel – don't do that.
Right.
Jackson might someday, but he's not that type of receiver either. He's a big, tall, lanky guy who's got speed, but it's straightaway speed, which you need also. But you also need that one guy who's just going to be able to cut over the middle. Who's, you know, Troy Brown used to be that guy. He's not
fascinating. The Troy Brown, Deion Branch kind of player
exactly.
that they've had in the past.
Exactly. You know, and even, you know, if Tim Dwight was a better catcher, he'd be that type of guy. You know, but I think they got rid of him or was, you know, because he's just not that good either. They don't have that guy who could just be open all the
right.
time.
And
know?
I think it's hard to place the, I know you want to place the blame on the quarterback because he gets the credit when they win. I understand this. But I just think it's hard to blame all those. Now, the first throw interception he threw, it was terrible.
I think two of them were his fault.
Yeah, two of them were his, but the first one was exceptionally bad. Yeah. That guy
unnecessary.
Was triple covered.
Yep.
It was a terrible pass. But I just think, you know, it's hard to blame everything on him because everybody's new here.
No.
The receivers are new.
If Falk catches that ball, who knows?
And who is Scott Zolak to say he should put it in the breadbasket?
I would have put
Scott Zolak couldn't carry Brady's luggage to the airport.
Yeah.
Zolak?
Are you telling me Falk shouldn't have caught that ball and then Zolak saying, oh, he should put it in the breadbasket? Shut up.
All I know is that he had two hands up and it went off both hands.
Yeah.
I mean, what else do you need? It wasn't like he was reaching behind him.
Talk about a radio host who's trying to analyze something too much.
No,
that's just ridiculous.
I thought that was more than a catchable ball. You know, it was right where it needed to be. You know, and Falk usually catches those. So it's unlike Falk to miss those, too. And, you know, once Vinatieri missed that field goal, I would have bet $50 right there in the spot that the Patriots score six.
I'd have bet more than 50.
Yeah, well, you're a little bit more, you know, risk taker than I am. But I'm just saying that I was sure that they're going to score.
Yeah.
This is going overtime.
Right.
You know, Falk makes that catch.
It's going overtime. Whoever gets the ball first wins. That's how I thought.
You know, so in it was almost like the two teams reversed, you know, roles. Mm-hmm. Usually it's the other team that has a chance and the Patriots somehow get a break and
right.
the other team
and,
doesn't
and I
do
don't
it.
Want people to think that I'm defending Brady's play in the Colts game because I'm not. He played terrible. I'm talking about when we talk the passing game in general, like as a whole. I think if you're going to place blame on one particular part, it's hard to place blame on a guy who last year, with no defense, no running game, but had receivers that he knew, had the best season of his career, put the team on his back,
yep.
and led him to the playoffs. It's hard to criticize.
I would have
that
felt
guy.
Better if Brady had that type of game against, let's say, San Diego or Baltimore or even Chicago, who supposedly has
yeah.
a good defense. But they did it against the Colts, and I don't think the Colts have a good defense.
They don't. It was a terrible game. He had a bad game.
So you can't even blame the fact that, well, they've got a good defense. You know, it's the Patriots should have scored a lot more points than they scored in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And I still say, though, that they didn't use Maroney enough or the right way, and I'm sticking by that.
I agree with you.
That's my story, and I'm sticking by it. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address, webradio@patriots.com. What other news do we have Patriots-related? Say it might rain. We don't know yet.
I'm not sure. Well, the game's at 1, and they said later in the afternoon, so we might get through it without any rain.
Right.
So,
what's the temperature going to be? I hear it's supposed to be pretty warm.
Yeah, it's supposed to be pretty warm.
Showers likely cloudy with a high near 59. East winds between 8 and 16 miles per hour.
There we go.
70% chance of rain.
At what time, though? Usually, like, they put the cloud at the second half of the day or something.
Too early for that.
Too early?
Yeah, see, it's kind of, right now they're saying late afternoon. Like I said, they're going to have to wait and see how the front moves. Sometimes it comes in slower, sometimes it comes in faster, but there'll probably be some precipitation at some point in the game.
All right. Got some emails coming in here at webradio@patriots.com. Want to thank everyone for that. Let's see.
Is Felger coming in today?
I don't know. Gary would know that.
Supposedly.
You got some things you want to talk to him about?
Who, Felger?
Yeah.
The one thing I disagree with him, and I want to get your take on this. Now, Brady threw a terrible pass in the end zone. We admit that, right?
Right.
Okay. But the play call to go for the end zone, I don't disagree with that ever. You know what I mean? Like, they were running the ball.
Right.
They set something up. It wasn't there. Now, Brady should have thrown the ball away. But the call to go deep on that play, I hate when people criticize
yeah.
that. That's
yeah, because
being
you
the
know
ultimate,
if he makes it, everybody would be like, brilliant.
That's the ultimate Monday morning quarterback.
Right.
Or
right.
Tuesday, what do they call it? Tuesday morning quarterback now? Or Monday
armchair
morning?
Quarterback?
Yeah, whatever. The second guess. Because everybody loves when you attack down the field. But then when it doesn't work, you sit there and analyze and say, well, we were running the ball.
Right,
but that's the best time to do it.
You got
to
take
they
your
were
shots,
running the
but
football.
You don't throw in a triple coverage.
Right, that the play call was fine.
Right.
Brady's decision was not. That was wrong with that
play.
Yeah,
and I agree with that wholeheartedly. Okay, let's get to some emails here. Reverend Ray says, okay, because it's Friday and all the normal questions are pretty much played out, here's the looking ahead question. Of the guys on the roster right now with 3 years or less experience on this team, who do you think will have the best-selling Patriots jersey? My guess, it won't be Mankins.
It'll be Maroney,
by
far.
Yeah.
If
Chad Jackson ever starts getting, going.
Still, though, if Maroney's the back we think he can be, if you're a running back and you're dominant, those jerseys fly off. Chad Jackson, for receivers, the receivers jerseys who sell high are more the T.O., Randy Moss kind of guys. I don't think we want that.
Right.
So,
well, if Dave Thomas ever gets going, he could get, because it's also a lot of people's first name, so they'll just buy it because it's their name.
Yeah.
All right, in listening to Bill's press conference this week, not sure which one specifically, he made what I thought was a good point when he compared Chad Jackson's progression to Ty Warren's. I want to know how many of you guys who were here then were jumping ship on Warren 8 games into his career.
Obviously, we think that was a terrible analogy, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, because Ty Warren was trying to break into a defensive line that had talent. Chad Jackson is playing with a bunch of NFL receivers that have done nothing. It's a terrible, terrible analogy. Terrible analogy.
But there were people saying, why isn't Warren doing anything at the time?
And he
took until like the Washington Redskins game to really start.
And I wasn't here back then, so I can't comment on that. My point with Chad Jackson is I don't care about the catch. I know rookies, receivers. Listen, you know me. I was in fantasy football. I know all about the three-year receiver thing, how they explode in their third season. I know all about this. The problem I have with Chad Jackson is that he's not even on the field much.
Right.
See, if he was on the field and was running routes and doing different things and just wasn't catching passes, I would feel better than the fact that they're not even using him that much, and that concerns me. But other than that, I say let's wait till next year.
Obviously, we only have what we've seen to go on, and it's not great, but Ty is a heck of a D lineman, but it took some time and a lot of work. Okay, so Tom explained that. Also, how bad a sign is it that we keep seeing Troy Brown in the secondary? Love the guy, but his D ain't great. Tell Andy I'm sorry for offending him with my choice of language. I was honestly hoping Fred would just read through and then realize what he said on the air, but Paul seems a little quicker on the uptake. I don't know. What are we talking about?
I have no clue.
Ray is coming to his first Jets game, his first game at Gillette Stadium, so he used a term for first time that regarded a fruit.
Was I here?
No, I think last time you just read it, and Paul didn't read it this time.
All right. A virgin, right?
Right, but the term when you are become no longer a virgin.
Oh, I never remember even something to do with a cherry.
Yeah. you're quick. I'll give you that.
But I didn't read that. That wasn't me. I don't know.
Jackpot.
What's wrong with cherries?
Nothing. I love cherries.
Phil from I see Next Gary time. Running to the record button. Phil
Next
from time. Nova Scotia. Good day, gentlemen. This is my first email, so I'd like to begin by thanking you for doing this show. I listen to you on my iPod at work, and you really make a boring day much better. My question is this. In last week's game against Indy, if the Pats had been able to get 6 on that final drive, what would be the chance that Belichick would have at least thought about going for 2? No way.
None.
No way. Now, before Tom rips me a new one for asking a dumb question, please remember I'm asking this on Friday, which seems to be the day for such questions. Yeah, I
don't think it's a dumb question. I just don't think Belichick would go for 2. I think very few pro coaches, unless you are coaching a losing team and you're trying to build like that, let's go for it mentality. College, you're likely to see that.
But, I'm thinking, though, with the Colts' run defense, that would be nice to just hammer them right up
the
middle
In the pros, you have to have confidence in your defense, your special, and it wouldn't happen.
Suzanne is from Nyack, New York, and she says the Patriots have thrown to Chad Jackson 11 times, of which he's caught 7 passes for 3 touchdowns. This leads to an obvious question. If you have a guy who is scoring a touchdown more than a quarter of the time you throw him the ball, why don't you throw him the ball? There may be a good answer to this question. Perhaps he's so immature that Belichick doesn't trust him or want him on the field, but I'm not there in practice, so I'm not willing to assume it's all Jackson's fault. People are complicated. Football is complicated, and it's foolish to radically downgrade your expectations of a guy who has shown great ability, not just in college or at the combine, but on the field in the NFL in severely limited opportunities. The touchdowns weren't flukes either. There were all fine efforts. He plays hard. He's always plays hard that I've seen. I don't know as much about football as you do, but I believe in him. P.S. Do you think the Herald should hire Bob Sanders? He's shown the ability to bring good physicality to Patriots coverage.
Okay. The one Jackson touchdown was blown coverage in Buffalo. That's a fact because they said it in the press conference that they blew the coverage. So he was wide open. The other two were very good plays on his part. But you go back to my point, they've only thrown to him 11 times, and he hasn't really been on the field enough for them to throw to him much more than that. And like I said, that's my concern. You think if he could do certain things, he'd be on the field more, you know, contributing more, even if they didn't throw him the football.
I know.
You know what I mean? So that's the only thing I'm concerned with is why is it still his hamstring? Is it still a little tender? They're not using him a lot. You know, we don't really know. But other than that, you know, we'll see how it goes. Rookie receivers, like I said, you're gonna hit an Anquan Boldin one out of every 100.
Yeah, one thing she fails to mention, though, they throw him the ball 11 times. He's caught 7 of them. I think those 4 they didn't catch were drops.
Yeah, he has dropped a couple,
so,
too.
I mean, there's a... You know, that's another reason why he comes off the field sometimes early is you notice after a drop, they take him right out.
Let me just, in his defense, mention something. You know what I think about Urban Meyer and that offense in Florida. I think it's a big freaking joke. Now, Jackson said at the combine, him and Chris Leak, who, by the way, is being cost tons of money by Urban Meyer for running that stupid offense, they had to go to Urban Meyer last year and ask him to put in some of the old stuff that they used to do, and that's when the offense started taking off. So maybe being in that rinky-dink offense that he was last year kind of set him behind a little bit, and now he's trying to get... Because Bill keeps talking about complicated... Listen, I don't care how complicated that offense is. It stinks in college football. He's running those rinky-dink little routes. So maybe being in that for a year, he kind of has to get back to where he was before he, you know, Urban Meyer brought that garbage from the WAC.
Why is it, though, that those Florida receivers, they have a history of not doing well in the NFL?
Well, I think under Spurrier, it's all system. See, we have to now it's different. Urban Meyer, though, it'll be the same thing because those receivers won't be able to play in the NFL because they're not going to be used to running NFL routes with that garbage that they run. But Spurrier, it was all system because no matter who he got, they were going to be successful in that passing offense.
Right.
It's kind of like Kentucky and like Texas Tech. You know how they run those, and their quarterbacks are always throwing for 600 yards, and the receivers are catching 10 passes for, and you're like, well, what come they never do anything in the pros? Well, because in college, when you're playing inferior opponents, you're going to put up huge numbers. And that's just the way it is. And I think a lot of the Florida receivers in the past had to do with Spurrier's system. We'll have to see how it goes from now on.
All right, Gary, let's take a break, and we'll be back to your emails.
It's here at your local Ford store. Comprehensive coverage on every vehicle we sell. That's right. Ford stands behind every 2006 model with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. Every Mustang, every 500, every Freestyle, every Explorer, even every F-Series truck. Every new 2006 Ford vehicle comes with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. That's security. Plus, right now you can get 0% financing on select Fords, 560 coverage, 0% financing. At Ford, we're with you every step of the way. See your local Ford store or call 1-877-4410. Ford, bold moves.
Come on.
How are you? Please, sit down. What's the reason for your visit?
Well, doctor, I need to ask you about something that I've been feeling lately.
Go on.
Doctor, you see, every time I drink Pepsi, I start hearing this. It's here in my head, and it seems like it's coming from inside of me. And then I start feeling an urge to dance and jump, and a strong sensation of happiness fills my whole body.
Hmm. What else?
You know, I take a sip. And suddenly, my hips start shaking, and my feet start sliding, and it happens when I'm with my friends, at school, out in the street, at my granny's house, even when I'm at the movies. It happens everywhere. Tell me, what is it? What is going on?
Well, I know what your problem is.
Yes?
You're out of tune. The song goes like this.
Pepsi, it's the cola.
Breaks a tackle, drives it upfield, to the 10, to the 5, touchdown, Benjamin Watson!
From a first-round draft pick in 2004 to owning the longest touchdown reception in Patriots playoff history, Benjamin Watson has become a standout for the three-time Super Bowl champs.
One of the best I've ever seen.
Now you can get an official mini replica helmet exclusively from the New England Patriots signed by Benjamin Watson free. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with a chin strap, receiver face mask, and Ben Watson's autograph. All you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Benjamin Watson. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autograph mini helmet limited to your first 400 with qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Okay, back here in PFW in progress. We're going through emails on a Friday. Webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio.
Are we supposed to talk? I don't know, Gary. That music's not telling me what to do. I don't know what to do when he plays that kind of
music.
Why?
What music is it?
No, I'm just saying, like, the fans at the stadium.
Okay. All right.
There he is. Woo!
Oh, my goodness. All right. Any football games on tonight? College?
Yeah.
Who?
UAB and Tulane, I think it is.
Okay.
No, it's not Tulane. Who's they playing? UAB's playing somebody.
Okay. Duke's playing BC.
Yeah.
BC's a 30-point favorite, something like that.
30 too little.
30 too little?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Duke sucks.
Okay, Neil Smith writes in from England. He says, still loving the shows via podcast. It's truly appreciated. All the work you guys do producing the show to keep us exile fans up to date with what's going on in Patriots land. It's not been a great week to be a Pats fan, and I think you all deserve some respect for your honest views and constructive criticism of the Patriots' performance last Sunday. We were all thinking what you guys had the courage to say, well done. Hopefully you won't run into Kevin Falk or Coach Bill in the parking lot. It's well known the Colts have the worst-ranked rush defense in the league, and we didn't take full advantage of that fact. This week's opponent, the Jets, fare little better and are ranked third worst. With the Jets' defensive weakness in mind, do you believe Coach Belichick will learn from the Colts game and keep the ball on the ground with Maroney much more? Or, as using Maroney as the number one back seems to be what everyone wants Bill to do, would he use that fact as a bluff and keep calling Corey's number or tell Brady to keep throwing, hopefully this time to someone in a blue shirt? So,
well, first of all, Kevin Falk's not the running back on the Patriots. I'm worried about meeting in the parking lot. Second of all, I don't think Bill cares what anybody says. He's going to do, UTEP and UAB, Western Michigan and Central Michigan, as Gary pointed out. I don't think Bill cares what Bill's not going to say, you know what, the media wants Maroney, so I'm going to use Dylan.
Right.
He makes a game plan based on how he thinks he can beat the Jets. And to beat the Jets, you can pretty much do whatever you want. So I agree with you, Fred. I think this is more of a balance type game where they're going to run some, they're going to throw some, and pretty much be successful at both.
You know, here's the thing, though, that what will happen. If, in fact, Maroney is a little tweaked and Belichick decides, well, you know what, we'll just use Dylan a lot in this game because, you know, why work Maroney's ankle, give him time to rest. We really don't need him that much. People will think the reason he's using
right.
Dylan is because, well, you know, he must have got his way with Belichick, you know.
I got another scenario. Maybe Bill's sick and tired of Dylan's crap and Dylan's inactive. What do you think about that?
That would be something. Let's see. This is from Harry in Bagram, Afghanistan. He says, why are you holding out on me? I just found out the Patriots cheerleaders are coming here for some sort of show. Hook me up. Who's coming? When? Tell them lies about how we are great friends and that you talk to your army buddy in Afghanistan all the time. I haven't seen a decent-looking woman in 6 months. At least have them bring me a poster or a calendar. That desperate plea not working? How about a bribe? Send them with gifts for me, and I'll send you a unit sweatshirt. Well, I wish I could tell you when or where they're coming, but the cheerleaders are going overseas. I think it's with the Air Force. I'm not sure which unit they're going with, but when they do their overseas trips, they don't even know where they're going, and it's for security reasons. Mm-hmm. So they just go five or six different stops all over the world, and they don't even know where it is or what day or anything. They're just along for the ride.
So basically this guy just blew the whistle.
Well, no. I mean, they're going overseas, but I don't know where.
He just heard they were going to Afghanistan.
I wouldn't bet on it. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea where they're going. I just know they're going overseas soon. So they purposely don't even tell the cheerleaders where they're going. So,
all right.
But if you hear of anything, you know, I'm sure if you're in the Army and you can attend, you know, be nice. And I'll still take the unit sweatshirt. That'd be cool. And he also includes a photo of himself. So I'll give that to you.
For what purposes?
So you can pin it up.
All right.
Let's see. I guess I should ask a question. Tom, a fool at work bet me the Jets would go 10-6 or better. Obviously, I'll be happily collecting in a few weeks. Should I offer him double or nothing? The Jets will not go 9-7.
Not based on their schedule. I don't think they'll go 9-7, but they play the same week schedule that the Patriots do, which means they get a lot of those NFC North teams. And you already got the bet won, so there's no sense. You know what I mean? That could be, you could end up just take the money because they're not going 10-6. So
it's
you already
bird
won.
In hand.
Yeah, you already won. So Just take the money.
Yeah. Let's see. Sean in Hazleton says, guys, what's your opinion if our defense is better than it was last year, and if it is in your opinion, is it a knock on Mangini as a bad defensive coordinator while Dean Pease seems to be doing a somewhat better job?
Well, let me give you a few names
here.
Well,
it's not fair, really.
Monty Beisel, Chad Brown, Michael Stone, Arturo Freeman. You remember those guys? They were so injured last year that I don't think Mangini had a full deck to play with. Like, you know, Pease has everybody, and he can throw out the kitchen sink if he wants, do whatever he wants. And it's, you know, plus Seau came in and has played well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big key.
I think the injuries and personnel have been so far better for the Patriots than they were last year.
Wilfork's better now. And
yeah. So it's not really fair. Having said that, I do think the defense is a little better than it was last year, but I think it's more to do with the players than it is with the coordinator.
Yeah.
You know? Let's see. This next one comes from Dwayne. Dwayne says not all wideouts are productive in the rookie season, and it's unrealistic to have the expectation that Chad Jackson will catch 50 balls this year and become disgruntled when he doesn't. Let's be honest. The real reason you're saying Jackson sucks is because Rashad Caldwell and Doug Gabriel sucks, and he hasn't stepped up yet. The difference is that Jackson is a rookie.
Dwayne, what are you talking about? Because nobody said what you just said, so shut up. How about that?
If anyone needs to step up.
A guy puts words in our mouths. Who said Jackson sucked?
If anyone needs to step up, it's the veterans. I'm tired of seeing Caldwell get laid out every week because he's too little. The Pats went from having one of the premier wideout cores to depending on the development of a rookie wideout for postseason success. That doesn't mean Jackson sucks. That means the personnel decisions suck. Andy has already labeled Jackson to be another Bethel Johnson with only a 3-year stay. A little harsh for this early in his career, isn't it? Let's call Jackson what he is, a rookie wideout.
You mean like Greg Jennings? You mean like Marquez Colston? How come it's unrealistic for 50 catches in your rookie year when other guys are doing it?
Also, I think Brady is getting too much of a pass for his bad decisions.
There we go.
Everyone thinks his favorite is the open guy, but my eyes tell me his favorite receivers are Brown, Watson, and Gabriel.
Yeah, they're the ones that are open.
I can tell he doesn't trust any of the other receivers because he consistently forces passes to these guys.
The other ones aren't open.
This year, we have seen Brady throw tons of passes into triple coverage, forcing the ball into spots that don't exist to his favorites. Against Buffalo, those forced passes go for touchdowns. Against defenses that actually move towards the ball, it's an interception. I have come to notice that good teams don't blitz Brady much. They just give him time and wait for him to one into coverage and grab it. Brady lacks faith in his receiver so much that it limits his ability. I propose a solution, that the Pats scale back to the 2003 version of the offense, short and intermediate passing routes to develop the timing of the offense with limited shots downfield. Once that timing develops, then the deep passes would have a better chance. Your thoughts? And by the way, good luck taking my Cleveland pick, Andy. I didn't think anyone would take the bait, but if I had to guess which one of you would have, it would have been you. Wow, this guy doesn't like Andy, huh?
No, but the thing about, you know, the Chad Jackson thing, and I forgot what I was going to say. I had something I was going to say, but I totally forgot about it. The, what did he say early on? I forgot.
What about the Brady forcing things into spots and because he doesn't trust any of the receivers, and that Graham, Brown, and Gabriel are his favorite receivers?
Yeah, I just, you know, the guys aren't open a lot. They're just not. We sit in the press box. We can see it. Believe me, these guys aren't getting wide open. And Brady's not comfortable with all
these
receivers.
What about teams not blitzing Brady and just waiting for him to make a mistake?
Well, that's because I think they know that the guys can't get open on a consistent basis. And sooner or later, you have to settle for a field goal or you make a mistake.
You know, and again, it goes back to my opening monologue about having that quick receiver like a Deion Branch, like an old Troy Brown, that can get open.
Let me ask you something.
Consistently.
Saying that unrealistic expectations for Chad Jackson are 50 receptions. Remember when people were, I just want to bring this up now. Remember in the preseason when I was taking a beating when people were writing in saying 1,500 yards for Corey Dillon?
Right.
How unrealistic is that now? I love it when these people, they make these stupid predictions, then we never hear from them again, but then they'll tell us, well, this is unrealistic. I heard that Corey Dillon was going to have a 1,500-yard year. Matter of fact, there's a couple of signed autographed jerseys on the line for that. How's that working out for you? Because I got news for you. The lady who sends out stuff here, she's not getting boxes ready, I can tell you that much. Corey Dillon be lucky to get 600 yards.
TG in New Jersey says...
That's my man.
TG in New Jersey says, Fred Poteet or Hank Kirsch? Hey, guys, I'm glad you enjoyed my last email, and I'm honored and humbled that you've put it up on the board. But you never did answer the question. Can you guys podcast the Neckin show, or can you watch it on the website?
That's a question for you. I don't know about that.
I guess they could. If we got it, we could put it up. So we'll effort that one.
You're not missing much. I mean, we pretty much say the same thing on the show that we do on here. So that's what I mean when I say that, is that it's kind of like a smaller version of this.
Right.
So you're basically going to get the same thing.
Also, please tell me that the Patriots will run the ball this weekend. And, Tom, how about that Rutgers game, 11:30 p.m., and the fans still covered the entire field with both goalposts knocked down? I'm starting to think you're right. College ball is better than the pros. And, Fred, no offense, don't forget we like Hank Poteet. What does that mean, though, Hank?
Because he's comparing you to Hank Poteet. Remember that email that came in where I was laughing so hard I couldn't finish reading it?
I don't remember.
The practice squad. You're the practice squad player who's like Hank Poteet, where they keep cutting you, re-signing you. And here it is. Let's go over it.
Okay.
This is our team. Andy, he's the consummate team player, fan favorite.
Oh.
Homeboy done good. Oh. Everybody's wearing his jersey. Always comes through in the big game. Solid player. Tom, he's the veteran free agent value signing. Took less money to be on a winning team. He's got the credentials. Greatness is expected and will be achieved. Paul, now this is where I start to lose it. He's the big franchise player on the last year of his contract. Wants to get to free agency and is desperately trying to avoid the franchise tag. Fred, constantly being signed to and released from the practice squad, kind of like Hank Poteet.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. I guess I should be insulted, but that's all right. Nick writes in, says, I just started listening to the podcast this fall, and I love it. Your program is unique in that you usually provide a great analysis of the game, but also provide great comic relief, whether it be intentional or unintentional. Tom does seem to be the stick that stirs the drink. In other words, he gets the rest of you going, but each of you seem to play an essential role, especially when Tom needs help pronouncing words like foliage and elementary. You have trouble pronouncing foliage?
Foliage. Isn't that how it is?
Yeah, foliage.
What did I call it before? I didn't think I had a problem with foliage. I have Illinois I have a problem with. I call it Illinois instead of Illinois. I can't even say
elementary.
That word. Yeah,
elementary.
I can't even say that word.
Okay, looking back to the Pats' four losses against Denver and Indy over last season in this season, I'm starting to wonder if the missing element is Charlie Weiss. While Tom Brady had a great statistical year last year, he seemed to struggle against Denver and Indy, and he has struggled this year against those two teams also. I was especially stunned by the fact that the Patriots got to play the Broncos in the regular season last year and then play badly in the second game in the playoffs. This seems to be very un-Patriots-like. To what degree do you think the absence of Charlie has affected Tom Brady's ability to play well against those two teams? Over this year and last, it seems like the Broncos and Colts defenses have figured out how to play against Tom and give him problems. Miami is another team like this. Thank goodness they are not better on offense. Do you think Tom's problem may be related to not having Charlie? And if so, what effect will it have on Tom's ability to come back and have good games against Denver and or Indy if we meet them in the playoffs?
Well, I think, you know, anytime you lose Charlie Weiss, you don't miss him.
The thing is, even with Charlie here, I remember the game that the Patriots won in Denver. The safety game where they had a pull. I mean, I remember us sitting in the press box when the Patriots were like third and five and they ran some crazy end around that was a loss for 2 yards. That was Charlie Weiss.
Right.
You know, so again, it goes back to the whole play calling thing.
And I got to be honest with you.
Charlie Weiss is great, but it's the same playbook.
Right. And I got to be honest with you. If fans are starting to get this down on Brady, then you're saying this isn't a very good team because he's it. He's the leader of the team. You know what I mean? If Tom Brady's not going to be playing well, you forget it. Yep. Forget about the playoffs, the Super Bowls, forget it. So if you honestly think that Tom Brady is not going to play well this season, then don't even mention the Super Bowl word. Don't even say it because they have no chance of going unless he plays well.
Nick also says, and by the way, he's from Westford, Vermont. He says, I also wonder if Belichick misses having Weiss as a strong presence on the coaching staff. In reading one of the books about the Patriots, it seemed that Bill values coaches who question his decisions and push back on him. Having healthy disagreements and discussing coaches' decisions seems like a very good thing. Because of Belichick's success, he is probably in danger of having a staff who simply become yes-men and treat everything that comes up as a holy scripture. I think Belichick knows he's not perfect, and if he doesn't have strong personalities to question his decisions, he will make more mistakes. I'm worried that Josh McDaniels is not in a position to play this role. Do you agree? Or do you think Josh does a good job pushing back on Bill's decisions in a way that leads to the best game plan?
I think that's a very good point. I think it's a very good point.
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with that one.
Yeah.
Because I don't know.
That is a very good, because Weiss was the type of guy, and see, I think that's true also with Belichick and Parcells. I think sometimes maybe Parcells would have something in. Remember the story he told us last year, Fred, about the Detroit Lions game, the run and shoot? Where I can't remember the entire story, but Belichick had this system in place for the Lions game. And so Parcells said something like, you know, he said something to him like, how are we going to cover? It was something to the regards that this isn't going to work. Well, they won the game 30-0 or something like that. They totally shut down the run and shoot. So there's a case where Parcells, being, you know, strong-willed and strong-minded, didn't think that what Belichick had in place was going to work. But he let it go because he trusted Belichick. He knew what kind of coach he was, and what happened in the end? The Lions didn't score a point. So I think that might be the same thing with Weiss and Cronell and those guys. He knew them so well that he trusted them.
Right. So he might not in trust his mind, these guys. He's not yet. Second.
Right.
You know, that's a good point. That's a very good point. All right, Garrett, it's 12:55. That means we need to take a break. We'll be right back.
It's here at your local Ford store. Comprehensive coverage on every vehicle we sell. That's right. Ford stands behind every 2006 model with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. Every Mustang, every 500, every Freestyle, every Explorer, even every F-Series truck. Every new 2006 Ford vehicle comes with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. That's security. Plus, right now you can get 0% financing on select Fords, 560 coverage, 0% financing. At Ford, we're with you every step of the way. See your local Ford store or call 1-877-4410. Ford, bold moves.
Come on.
How are you? Please, sit down. What's the reason for your visit?
Well, Doctor, I need to ask you about something that I've been feeling lately.
Go on.
Doctor, you see, every time I drink Pepsi, I start hearing this. It's here in my head, and it seems like it's coming from inside of me. And then I start feeling an urge to dance and jump, and a strong sensation of happiness fills my whole body.
What else?
You know, I take a sip, and suddenly, my hips start shaking, and my feet start sliding, and it happens when I'm with my friends, at school, out in the street, at my granny's house, even when I'm at the movies. It happens everywhere. Tell me, what is it? What is going on?
Well, I know what your problem is.
Yes?
You're out of tune. The song goes like this.
Pepsi, it's the cola.
Breaks a tackle, drives it upfield, to the 10, to the 5, touchdown, Benjamin Watson!
From a first-round draft pick in 2004 to owning the longest touchdown reception in Patriots playoff history, Benjamin Watson has become a standout for the three-time Super Bowl champs.
One of the best I've ever seen.
Now you can get an official mini replica helmet exclusively from the New England Patriots signed by Benjamin Watson free. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with a chin strap, receiver face mask, and Ben Watson's autograph. All you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Benjamin Watson. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to the first 400 with qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Bank of America would like to take a moment to let you hear what our home equity line of credit sounds like. You see, if you want to remodel the kitchen...
It smells great, hon.
Or renovate the bathroom...
Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my...
Or fix up anything around the house, Bank of America's home equity line of credit is the easy, low-cost way to make it all happen. There's no paperwork to bring, so applying is simple. And you'll have access to your money just about everywhere, by phone, online, and at our banking centers nationwide. All of which makes putting that pool in the backyard... a little less of a dream and a little more of a reality. So whether you want to have the pros handle it or do it yourself, a Bank of America home equity line of credit is your ticket. Apply today. Just visit bankofamerica.com, call 1-800-900-9000, or stop by your neighborhood banking center.
Clementine.
Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Bank of America. Higher standards. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
This is PFW in progress.
This is Mr. Hadley. He's captain of the guards. I'm Mr. Norton, the warden. You are convicted felons.
PFW in progress.
Rule number one, no blasphemy. I'll not have the Lord's name taken in vain in my prison. The other rules, you'll figure out as you go along. Any questions?
When do we eat?
With Fred Kirsch.
Treasure Island, Robert Lewis.
Stevenson. What's next?
Count Monte Cristo.
That's Cristo, you dumb sh**.
Who's this agent? Ben Dofa?
Or... No, Gary Uberstein.
Who am I thinking of?
Alexandre Dumas. Dumas.
Dumas.
Paul Perillo.
I'd only ask 3 beers apiece for each of my co-workers. I think a man working outdoors feels more like a man if you can have a bottle of suds.
Maybe I just drink to get drunk.
And Andy. And Andy?
Young punk. Mr. Rock and Roll. Cocky as hell.
Hey, come on, old boys. Move it like molasses. Making me look bad.
We liked him immediately.
Andy Hart.
Andy crawled to freedom through 500 yards of smelling foulness I can't even imagine.
And while I'm excited about my future at Dighton Rehoboth,
some guy named Tom.
What the crisis is, happy horse.
He took the Lord's name in vain. I'm telling him
what. You'll be telling him about the tonic, your ass. What is your malfunction, you fat barrel of monkey spunk?
And you never know, Lori might stop by.
Lord, it's a miracle.
Nothing left but that cupcake on the wall. Let's ask her. Maybe she knows. What say you there, Fussy Britches? Do you like talking?
PFW in progress.
I believe in 2 things, discipline and the Bible. Here you'll receive both. Put your trust in the Lord. Your ass belongs to me.
All right, welcome back to PFW in Progress. Fred and Tom here. The A-team. No, I'm just Hank Poteet. I'm just a practice squad player.
You're just trying to stick. You're trying to survive.
Just trying to hang on here. Maybe someday I'll get my shot. You know, that's all I can ask for. All right, webradio at patriots.com is the email address. That's webradio at patriots.com. And perhaps at some point, Felger might show up from the Herald and whatever else he does. And maybe he'll do some interviews. I don't know.
He does it all.
You know, he does it all. So we're taking your emails here. Again, it's webradio at patriots.com. In case you want to phone us, it's 508-543-7482. We're looking forward to this game because, A, we think the Patriots are going to win, and also it's a Sunday at one game.
Yeah, we like
that. Which is nice. Rumor is that the Patriots will get affected by the flexible schedule, the Chicago Bears game. The question is whether it'll be 8 or 4. But something might happen with that game.
Where are you leaning on that? What do you think it's going to be?
Man, I'm just hoping the Bears keep losing. I don't want another 8 o'clock game. I really
don't. Those back-to-back ones killed us. We're never the same after that.
No. So I'm hoping that it's just a 4, you know, but I don't know. If the Bears win.
But still, though, now if the Colts are undefeated and you have the undefeated
team.
That's
true.
You can't give that up.
Who would they be playing that
week? The Eagles.
The Eagles.
Which is a legitimate chance to lose.
Gotcha. Yeah, there you go. But I don't want the Colts to keep winning either. So.
Well, they can lose after that.
Yeah, okay.
It's only a couple. I mean, Thanksgiving's here, Fred. I mean, get the turkey. It's coming.
I know. You got any plans for Thanksgiving?
I think the family's going to come here.
Oh, that's nice. So, you going to cook?
Well, am I going to cook or is my fiance going to cook?
Is she going to cook?
She's going to cook. I'm going to be sitting on the couch in sweatpants watching
now,
football.
Is this one of those deals where, okay, your fiance plans on cooking, but then your mother comes in and takes over the kitchen?
Oh, as soon as my mother gets here, it's all over.
Yeah, she takes over.
And for good reason, because she can cook way better than my fiance. So that's not even close.
Don't ever tell your fiance that.
Oh, she knows that.
Okay. And she's
well, you've
okay
had
with
my
it?
Mother's.
I know. I mean, but a lot, is your fiance okay with that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
As long as she can make a good sandwich, she's okay.
All right. Well, you can't make your own sandwich?
Not a good one.
Really?
I mean, I'll make it.
Pieces of bread with stuff in the middle.
Yeah, it just seems like when she makes it, it tastes better.
Oh, boy. No, but I can just see your mom coming in and just taking over.
Oh, yeah. As soon as she gets there, it's all over.
Now, do you have the usual turkey and all that stuff?
Yeah, turkey. My mother makes a breaded cauliflower.
I hate turkey.
Why do you hate turkey?
I'm just not a big turkey. It's too bland a meat.
Go ahead, Fred. Tell everybody what you have for Thanksgiving.
Well, when I grew up, it was always lobster and or roast beef.
Get on to the emails. I can't even talk.
Well,
to
well
this
now, hold
fancy.
On for a second.
You don't fancy.
You don't
Foofy
think that
fancy.
The first pilgrims ate lobster? Of course they did.
I don't give a crap what
it's
they
New
ate.
It's New England.
I don't care what they ate.
Right?
On Thanksgiving, you eat turkey. End of story.
Well,
I don't make the rules, Fred. I just follow them. I want to date 16-year-old girls, but they won't let me. I didn't make the law. I just follow them.
All right. Steve from Ontario, Canada, writing in. Just wanted to comment on Sunday Night Football this past week. You know, it's Friday. We're still talking about the game that happened. That's not usual here. But
tough loss.
He wanted to talk about the Sunday Night Football this past week and the commentary during the game. At one point, John Madden says, and I quote, "I don't know how anybody doesn't like Peyton Manning the way he plays." And then went on to suck his Phuket for about 10 minutes with the other moron in the booth with him.
He was thinking, okay, we get the extra. Whoa, what happened? You know, go on in. You know.
It was so bad at one point, I felt like blowing my brains out, or at least Madden's. Well, I can certainly tell you why I despise Manning. Mostly it has to do with him. The way he acts like a crybaby when things aren't going his way, stomping his foot when a play doesn't go his way, like last year's Pats-Colts game, and he doesn't have the heart of a champion. But there is more to it than just that. It's the way the commentators treat him that puts him over the top. Without them, he would just be a really good quarterback with an objectionable personality. The way those announcers treat Manning drives me crazy. How they don't refer to Manning making a play, but Peyton, he's everyone's buddy. We use his first name. When I hear them say something like, "And Peyton passes to Reggie for 12 yards, I want to go on a rampage. This is sports." You don't hear people make ridiculous comments like, "Wow, Tom was great on that throw. Too bad Doug and Rashe dropped it."
That's not true.
Maybe they should try Lawrence on the ground next time. Who talks like this? Am I the only one that notices this?
Fred, when's the last time they referred to Emmett Smith as Smith?
It's Emmett.
If they called him Emmett. When you have certain people, they call by the first name.
Thank you, Robert.
Dion. Do you know who I'm talking about? It's Deion Sanders. They called him Deion. Called him Primetime. You know what I mean? Some guys, they just pick up and they do that. Now, you know, I hate Peyton Manning. I hate him. Like, he did something personally to me. Like, that's how much, just because of the college days, he had the same loser look on his face. By the way, his brother has adapted that. It must be a Manning thing.
Right.
And I agree with Brian Cox wholeheartedly. His father never won anything. They make excuses for him. Peyton's never won anything. They make excuses for him. His brother will never win anything. They'll make excuses for him. He said, when is it ever going to be the family's fault? When is it ever going to be their fault? We always say, well, Archie played on a bad team. Well, Peyton doesn't have a defense. It's true. That is true.
Well, he even blamed Chad Scott for being in the wrong place for the interception.
So I hate Peyton Manning, but the bottom line is that he's playing as good a quarterback in the NFL as there is right now. He can't, you know, you can't say anything.
When you look at him, man, he's so laser. Yeah. Accurate. He's so good.
He's phenomenal, and I don't like him. This is coming from a guy who hates him, but that's just the truth.
One last point. The day before the Minnesota game, I filled out my fan Pro Bowl ballot on NFL.com, and naturally I looked for the Patriots players at every position who I thought deserved a vote. When I got to wide receiver, NFL.com had Rashay Caldwell as the only Pats receiver on the Pro Bowl ticket. Are you kidding me? Before the Minnesota game, he did exactly nothing and has picked up right where he left off now that Minnesota is done. How can this guy appear on a Pro Bowl ticket? I can tell you that's one Patriots that didn't get a vote from me.
Well, let me put your mind at ease. No Patriot receivers will be in the Pro Bowl. You have a personal guarantee from Tom Casale on that one.
And the way
it doesn't matter who they put on the ballot.
The way they make those tickets is they put the perceived number one at each position from each team so that the teams get represented on the ticket. It has nothing to do with...
Who would you rather have on the ticket? Gabriel, I guess?
That's what I'm saying. They have to pick somebody.
Right.
You know, so that's why that's... But it has nothing to do with, they think he's Pro Bowl caliber.
Right. The Patriots don't have any Pro Bowl caliber receivers.
Not at this moment. No, they do not. Here we go. Mike's in the room. Mike's setting up his little mini laptop there. Very nice. But he says, this is Bob from Regina, Canada. With the recent episode with Corey Dillon and Mike Felger and the alleged episode between Dante Whitner and his girlfriend, what is your theory why many athletes are so belligerent off the field?
Look at that douchebag.
Is it that their huge ego always has to be fed, as it has since high school? Is it that the media criticism of their performance cuts so deeply to their manhood that they have to strike out? Are they naturally belligerent and can't separate life on the field from life on the sidelines? Or do drugs or supplements they ingest or head injuries affect their behavior patterns? I think it can be all above
them,
or, none or all of them,
And I'll have to say, though, and I'm not just saying this, Felger handled that perfectly because I have to be honest.
Do you feel that way?
No, yeah, you know why, and I'm going to tell you why.
I mean, your Colhart's been calling me a wuss bag, basically.
No, I think, Andy Hart, he would have been running with his tail between his legs. Are you kidding me? That fraud. But you know why he handled it perfectly? Because if it was someone like me, and you both know me, and I'm not just saying this, I'd tell Dillon to F off. You know I would, because I'm not going to take that kind of crap. I don't care who he is.
Brian Moore used to do it all the time. Willie McGinnis stuffed him in a locker. I'm serious.
But like in anger or in jest?
Oh, yes. Corey. I had Lawyer Malloy I had to talk to Lawyer Malloy on behalf of Brian Morey because, Malloy was about to go at it.
Yeah, so. But that's different because Corey Dillon's going around bullying people, and I'm not going to take that kind of crap. All Corey Dillon is, he's someone who makes a lot of money because he can run with the football. So big deal. We're entitled to be in that locker room. We're not doing anything wrong. And by the way, what did Felger even write that was bad? That's the part I didn't get.
I know. What was your
I think from what I understand, because someone else talked to a teammate of his who said, what was that all about? And the teammate said, we're not children. You can't be calling us children. We're grown men. Can't be calling us children.
And act like men.
And then when that was related back to me, well, because when he was MFing me, I was literally standing there like, okay, what did I say? I was going through my head, that mental inventory you take. What did I do? What did I say? What did I write? Because I do and say and write a lot over the course of a week. Turns out it was from something last week, last week's report card after the Minnesota game, where I said the following. And it was after Corey Dillon threw the ball across the field in Minnesota. I wrote, how can a guy who's been in the league so long act like such a child after making a play?
Okay.
Period. One line.
Okay.
And I think that was it.
Oh, and you
those
know,
report cards, nothing ever good came out of those report
zero.
Cards, whether you were Mannix.
But you know what?
Not one friend has been made from the report card. Not one.
Still, though, you don't go physically, you know, threatening people.
You don't threaten
especially
people.
150-pound Felger. You want to threaten someone? I'm 230. Come
yeah!
get some of me, baby.
That's what I'm talking about. Atta boy, Tommy.
On the phone right now is Jamie in Houston. Jamie, how you doing?
What's going on, guys? It's good to talk to you. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Hi, Jamie.
Hey, just to regress a little bit, I didn't get a chance to chime in earlier in the week and talk about a wonderful Sunday night matchup last week, and you all were talking earlier about Manning and Brady. And you've got to, in my eyes, I see it, you know, if everybody – prior to that game was giving Brady the slight edge as to, you know, who's your quarterback, who's the best quarterback, slight edge to Brady. And, you know, I always believed that and felt that myself. But, you know, until proven otherwise, I think Peyton's made that jump. And I think anybody can agree that between those two quarterbacks, if they're playing their A++ game, they're playing their best game, there's no doubt that Peyton Manning edges out Brady by, you know, not a large margin, but by recognizable margin.
The problem with
the big pinch is the get is that, you know, who plays best on average when it counts more, and historically that's been the Brady. But is this the time where Peyton makes the jump? I don't know. I certainly don't hope so, because I hate the guy too.
Here's my difference between the two still is I think Manning needs his teammates to be playing well as well, whereas Brady, I think, has played well despite other things.
I disagree. I mean, I think
I think Manning's great, but he hasn't done it in adverse conditions.
Okay, well, that's a different story. I mean, if
that's
you're telling
Brady
me,
has.
We're talking about A++ games.
Well, no.
They're playing their best games, Peyton Manning wins out of 10
But my point is, what does it require for Manning to play his A++ game?
I guess what I mean is that I'll take Brady in that playoff game over Manning, but I think, you know, I think Dallas Clark is an average football player, and he's made into a very great one by Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning, I think, makes everyone around him better.
I agree with that. Yeah.
And, you know, I think you can give him pretty much, you know, good, not great receivers, and they're still going to put up huge numbers there.
I think Marvin Harrison would be great on any team.
Yes, he would. But I still think Manning, I think Manning's so great at surveying the field, finding where the opening is, and exploiting a defense that I think he would make.
Unless guys are where they're not supposed to be.
He's got great football instincts. And let me throw in a visual for you guys that kind of sticks in my mind from the game. Like on three or four counts, I mean, imagine Peyton Manning just closing his eyes as he's, you know, the pressure's getting ready to crush him. He's closing his eyes. He's just launching that ball and crying out, you know, he's crying out to Marvin. Marvin! I mean, that's exactly what I saw, my own mental picture. I mean, because there was two or three times where he was just launching him.
Yeah,
and those guys are just behind him. He's got great instincts to know and the trust in his guys to, you know, go sniff out that ball. And Marvin Harrison does it better than anybody.
Technically, there's no one better than Peyton Manning. The guy is just laser accurate. He is amazing. It really is. It really is a joy to watch him play quarterback.
Yeah,
no
I mean, he was having, you know, that was one of the, you know, the best in the clutch performances I've seen, because I mean he was completing passes that he had no business completing in that game. It was downright frustrating to watch.
Well, he was just awesome in that game. I mean, he took his game to the next level, and the element to it that made it just so special. It's not like he was back there, Fred, sitting back there all day cleaning the pocket.
Killed.
He was getting chased.
No, he was.
He was getting taken off of his spot, which is what you hear the Patriots defense say all the time. If we can just get him off his spot, we have a chance. They got him off his spot, and he still made plays.
I'm just bored with the argument. Peyton Manning's good. That's news to Patriots fans and nobody else in the country. Seriously. They're both great. They're both going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but Tom, you got to say that element, that escapability, the making plays on the perimeter of the defense.
I think he's playing his best football that I've ever seen him play, because he's not just racking up meaningless touchdowns against inferior teams. He's going on the road in hostile environments. He's leading his team to victory with good precision throws, like you said, moving around, not just throwing bombs.
He's never been better. I agree.
And he said it in the press conference. The question with this team is always going to be, how are you going to perform in the playoffs? And it's a legitimate question, and they have to answer it this year.
All right.
Hey, and last parting words for Mike. Hang in there, but always keep in mind you're writing about large men with little patience, you know. So just got to keep that in mind, my friend. But
there you go.
You did right. You
Thanks.
Take care.
Thank
take
you.
Take care, guys.
Too.
Are you kidding? It's the writer's badge of honor if they ever get physically accosted by a player.
No, that's not how I feel.
No, I'm not saying you look for that, but once it happens, you've made your bones.
I don't know.
Oh yeah.
I don't feel that way.
I'm dying to get hit by somebody. That's $10 million. I never work again. I sit at home and listen to you guys on the radio.
Well, I mean, ever since in this town, Will McDonough, who did he punch? In
Ray Claiborne.
Raymond Claiborne. He sent into the towel bin. No.
What happened is he sent Billy Sullivan. That fracas sent Billy Sullivan into the towel bin.
Oh, okay.
What happened
okay.
was, Ray Claiborne was trying to get out of a pile, and he sort of pushed McDonough on his way out of this pile, out of a media gathering, then sort of poked McDonough in the face, and McDonough throttled him back into that locker stall, and they sort of went tumbling into that locker stall, and then Claiborne pushed his way back out of it, and this whole pig pile sort of thrust back, and I guess Billy Sullivan used to have a habit of sort of standing around the media piles to listen to what his players were saying.
Right.
So Billy was on the outside of this pile, and as the whole crowd surged back, Billy went ass over tea kettle into the laundry bin, and all the reporters looked back around, all they saw were feet sticking out of the laundry bin. It was Billy Sullivan.
So the urban myth then is that McDonough cold cocked him.
He did.
Oh, he did.
Well, he did. I mean, to cold cock is sort of a, I don't know.
It's not the movies. It's not like
picturing Raymond Claiborne sort of trapped in his locker as all the media are around, a player next to him. I forget who the star of the game was. The Pats had beaten the Jets like 42-0 that game. I think the star of the game, whoever it was in the next locker. So all the media was around this
right.
player next to Claiborne. And so Claiborne was trying to get his way out, and McDonough was sort of standing there. And to get his way out, Claiborne sort of poked McDonough, poked him like this.
Yeah,
and McDonough's response was to throttle him. But see, I mean,
what do you mean throttle him?
Well, he sort of punched and lunged, and they went tumbling back
okay.
into Claiborne's
okay.
locker.
Okay, so there was a punch throw.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. What now?
Tales from the Patriot sidelines, available Amazon.com.
That's right. You did the research on that one.
Talk about making chicken
salad. I remember the Ryan Leaf incident where he kind of threw a hissy fit, but
never threw a punch.
You never threw a punch. Do we know of any other incidents where there actually was a fight between a media member and an athlete?
Ever? Anywhere?
Yeah.
Deion Sanders and McCarver, where he threw the water
bucket
on
of
him.
Ice on him. Yeah.
You don't talk to me, all right?
And we know that Parcells threw hot tea on Kevin Mannix.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
And they actually, I think, got tied up together. Anything else?
God, no.
That would be a good one.
It doesn't happen often because these guys are worth millions, and I think in their head they say, if I touch somebody,
right.
10 They've of got, my million are going to go
right.
away.
They've got everything to lose, and the writer has right. nothing to lose, you know? But we did a poll, and we figured if there was one writer around here that we can see it happening to, it'll be Curran.
Oh, well, Curran's a fighter.
Yeah.
You know, Curran's a scrapper. He's Will McDonough type,
yeah.
for sure.
Absolutely.
But at least Felger wasn't like that pansy Jeremy Stevens, you know, egging him on, like laughing like a little girl. Like, you know, and I don't like Warren Sapp, but he was right that time. Jeremy Stevens is a punk. And, you know, when Brayton, you know, need him, and
right.
he was, you know, acting like a little, come on. At least Felger didn't act that way.
I just basically stood there and let him prance and strut and MF me. And
although I did think he was going to hit you at
did
one
you?
Point. Yeah.
I mean, he had that look in his face, but he never got within 10 yards of me. And if he really had a problem, I mean, he could have come and stood toe-to-toe with me and said what he had to say or do what he had to do, but it was just sort of making...
I think Corey's bark is a lot worse than his bite.
Right. It was a big, fat bark, and it was a menacing bark, and it was a vulgar bark, but that's really all it was.
I think Corey just likes to talk, and he's fine.
Yeah, he goes after the little reporters like him and Andy Hart.
You know, I think the story ran today... I think the headline was ridiculous compared to what the story was.
I still haven't seen it, but I mean, think about the headline though. What does anger management mean?
Manage anger.
Well, don't you think that Corey carries himself as an angry man?
Look, you read that.
Answer that question.
Does he carry himself as an angry man?
Do you look at Corey Dillon?
I think there are times where he wants people to perceive him that way in order to buffer himself.
Okay, well, if it's an act, then
that's
it's
his defense mechanism.
That's a pretty good act.
Yeah,
because he was pretty damn angry the other day.
It's not this is the old Mike Tyson thing. Oh, he does that for the money. Sure he does.
It's exactly what I do sort of compare it to Mike Tyson.
I just thought that the headline was not indicative of the story.
Well.
And this story puts him in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the story puts him in
a
positive
great story.
Light. The story puts him in a positive light.
Absolutely. So, you know.
And let's face it, 99.9% of fans only care about how Corey plays about on the field as That's well it. They should.
Right.
And so,
and half of them want to, him to punch you.
Half.
More than half.
I'd say about 85 to 90%.
Hell, I was rooting for it.
Absolutely. To see a, but any player in any media, if a player gets motivated or pissed off or a hair crosses ass by a media guy, right. God bless the player. Go for it, Corey. That's the way most people feel, and they should.
Yep.
They should.
But he should do it in a different way. He shouldn't threaten to beat you up.
Well, you know what?
This is middle school.
And it's not just sports. What lost more than anything else Mike Dukakis the presidential election when he was running for president?
That goofy shot of him with the helmet in the tank?
No. When they asked him what he would do if his daughter had been raped, and he showed no emotion in the debate. He, you know, well, you know, they're talking about capital
punishment.
That's
really the reason why only one state voted for him.
He refused to get mad like a parent would, and if he had done that.
The guy got beaten worse than any presidential candidate in the world, and you're saying one answer to a question.
Well, I mean, I'm telling you, that hurt him a lot, a lot. People like it when, you know emotion comes out.
See, it's just not me. You know, I just don't have, that's not
Drew Bledsoe, the whole thing, he doesn't have heart, you know, and then, you know, because he wouldn't yell at his receivers. And then finally in a Jacksonville game, he yelled at Vincent Brisby for not coming back to the ball. And everybody, oh, this is great. He's finally doing it. It's silly. All right. Stan says, however, what's this? He's starting an email in mid-sentence here.
However.
Oh, okay. I got to read the subject. He says, this is not a Brady bash. However, I don't think we need to place blame. The screen pass to Watson was terribly overthrown. The screen to Maroney was a bullet from 3 feet away. There was plenty of blame to go around, but don't place it all on the receivers. Give credit to Bob Sanders for making enough stops to keep the Pats from running every down, and give the Colts credit for making plays.
Tom had a bad day. The thing that bothers me is that it's like you either have to be in the camp or you're either on the bus or off the bus. You cannot criticize Brady for a night without people saying, well, who would you rather have? What are you saying, bench him? What are you saying, he sucks? Right, no, right. I'm saying he's the best quarterback in the league. I love the guy to death. He had a lousy night.
Game.
You can feel the same way, but a lot of people don't like to
the
do that.
The team had a bad night, and Brady's included.
Fred, it's the way people treat politics. It's unobjective. You're either this
or that. Right,
you're right or you're left, so you agree with everything the Republicans agree with or everything the Democrats agree with.
I can't stand it.
And that's,
I can't stand it.
That's just unproductive and not, frankly, that intelligent. You judge and evaluate everything on its
Absolutely.
Own merits,
Absolutely.
On its own individual thing. That night, Tom Brady helped lose that team a game. You can't say that very often, but it was the case on that night.
Right.
And the throw to the end zone where the guy was triple covered is about as bad a throw as you'll see.
It's
Brady
a bad decision. Throw. Bad decision by
it was
the quarterback.
Yeah, totally.
You know? Now, Peyton Manning, on the other hand, when he makes a mistake, it's because the guy got lucky and was in the wrong place.
Right. Now, that guy bugs me.
Okay.
I mean, and Brady also has, let's be, again, objective. I think Tom, you know, he'll tell you that three of those four interceptions were not his fault. And he says it in his own way. He says, yeah, that first one I shouldn't have thrown. The next three, I've got to go look at it.
Right.
And he even said this week, you know, I was thinking that one to Ben Watson could have been a touchdown. What he's saying is, if that's Tony Gonzalez out there, he climbs the ladder, gets the ball, and takes it to the house.
Behind him. And
well, I mean,
anyway.
Brady ain't so great at, you know, taking blame himself.
He's not the best loser.
No, he's not.
He does it in a different way.
Right. And he looks better doing it for the women.
Much.
Yeah. Peyton, I don't know. He's not a good-looking guy. But he gets all the commercials.
Because I think 12 turns him down, and they go.
Exactly.
I think Brady's first on the list, and when he's not available, they go to number 18 or whatever. What number's Peyton Manning? How come I don't know?
18.
18. Thank you.
Well, that's another thing he has to thank Brady
Mike
for.
Mike Felger Show, ladies and gentlemen.
69.
Brian Smith writes in another one starting in the middle. They also had to play the Colts from behind the entire game. Thanks to Brady's first interception in the way they were playing
down by seven.
Playing the Patriots. You can't play catch up with the Colts.
Did you guys hear this?
They were never down by more than 10 points.
Not to interject a Red Sox thing, but I'm just going through my email here as I get settled. Buster Olney is saying that the Pats won the bidding for Daisuke Matsuzaka. You see that?
Pats did? What's he going to come in here? And,
did I say the Pats?
They need a receiver.
He throws the ball harder than Brady.
The Sox.
Oh, they did?
Well, that's what Olney is saying.
Who is this?
Never
is
mind,
this?
Fred. Just go back to sleep.
Baseball.
Sorry about that.
Screw Baseball. The Sox. Let's talk some football. There you go. Webradio@patriots.com. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. Let's go. Let's jump on it.
It's here at your local Ford store. Comprehensive coverage on every vehicle we sell. That's right. Ford stands behind every 2006 model with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. Every Mustang, every 500, every Freestyle, every Explorer, even every F-Series truck. Every new 2006 Ford vehicle comes with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. That's security. Plus, right now you can get 0% financing on select Fords, 560 coverage, 0% financing. At Ford, we're with you every step of the way. See your local Ford store or call 1-877-4410. Ford, bold moves.
Come on.
How are you? Please, sit down. What's the reason for your visit?
Well, Doctor, I need to ask you about something that I've been feeling lately.
Go on.
Doctor, you see, every time I drink Pepsi, I start hearing this. It's here in my head, and it seems like it's coming from inside of me. And then I start feeling an urge to dance and jump, and a strong sensation of happiness fills my whole body.
What else?
You know, I take a sip. And suddenly, my hips start shaking, my feet start sliding, and it happens when I'm with my friends, at school, out in the street, at my granny's house, even when I'm at the movies. It happens everywhere. Tell me, what is it? What is going on?
Well, I know what your problem is.
Yes?
You're out of tune. The song goes like this.
Pepsi, it's the cola.
Breaks a tackle, drives it upfield, to the 10, to the 5, touchdown, Benjamin Watson!
From a first-round draft pick in 2004 to owning the longest touchdown reception in Patriots playoff history, Benjamin Watson has become a standout for the three-time Super Bowl champs.
One of the best I've ever seen.
Now you can get an official mini replica helmet exclusively from the New England Patriots signed by Benjamin Watson free. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with a chin strap, receiver face mask, and Ben Watson's autograph. All you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points, redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Benjamin Watson. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact, too. Autographed mini helmet limited to your first 400 with qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Hey, sweetie, when I picked up the dry cleaning today, I put 43 cents into our savings.
I'll alert the media.
Introducing Keep the Change from Bank of America.
And at lunch, I put away 61 cents.
Really?
That much. Each time you buy something with your Bank of America Visa check card, we round up the amount to the next dollar and transfer your change from your checking to your savings account.
I checked online, and so far we've saved $2.25.
Wow. A whole $2.25.
Try $225.
Oh.
Plus, we'll match 100% of your Keep the Change savings for the first 3 months and continue matching 5% up to $250 a year.
I'm back from the store. Just saved 8 cents.
I'll alert the media.
Open a checking account and keep the change. Only at Bank of America. Higher standards. Match paid annually after anniversary of enrollment. Savings accounts include regular savings with annual percentage yield of 0.5%. Member FDIC. Patent pending.
Back here in PFW in Progress, Fred and Tom. Be here until 2 o'clock, and I guess Troy Brown's going to be down here shortly, so we're waiting for his arrival.
I need more cumin!
Meantime, we'll continue taking your emails here at webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. And the phone number is 508-543-7482. Boy, people still, they just want to talk about this Colts game. We can't shake it. I said last Tuesday that I had already put this game behind me, that the Patriots had a bad game, and hopefully they're going to meet this team again in the playoffs. But, you know, what else is there to say about it? It's, you can't say that each team was playing their best and the Colts won. Patriots played terribly. Colts didn't play that well either, but they didn't play as bad as the Patriots did. And, you know, that's it. Where's Tom? Is Tom here? Tom, I don't know where Tom is. Where did Tom go, Gary?
Fasten your seatbelts. It's pee-pee time.
Oh, okay. Brian in Colorado is another one that still wants to talk about the Colts game. He says, take what they give you. So was the run not there for the taking in the second half of the Colts game? Or did they get that taken away? Or what they give you, or from the take what they give you philosophy? I don't know what that means. I maintain that the Patriots don't have an offensive identity other than occasionally being an offensive offense. Wow. Pretty harsh words for the Patriots. No, I think they made a mistake. I don't think that they used Maroney the right way in that second half. Tom's back. You okay?
I agree with you.
Everything all right?
Jeez, I got a tank of leak so bad I can taste it.
We talked about this
Brian,
before.
Brian says that he doesn't believe the Patriots have an offensive identity.
Yeah, that might be the case.
I mean, their identity is Tom Brady. Let's face it. He is, when you think of the Patriots offense,
right,
you think of Tom Brady.
I don't think, but they always do whatever they need to do to win.
Right.
You know, so I don't know if they've ever had an identity, because if they need to run it, they'll run it. Even with Antoine Smith when he was here, if they had to run it some, they'd run it. If they have to throw short, they throw short. If they have to throw deep, they throw deep.
I'm a little.
You don't think their identity was once obviously throw first and run
well,
as a compliment?
I think it was absolutely
their identity. But I'm just saying they do whatever it takes to win.
Well, I mean, that was their identity because that was their personnel at the time.
Right.
But I went into this season saying on this show that they're going to win this year from running the ball and playing good defense. Where I'm I think they play pretty good defense. I think I'm disappointed in the fact that they still aren't a team where that can impose their will in the running game.
Well, and that's
they just can't line
in
up and
our,
run.
Next issue of PFW, where we do the awards for the Patriots, most disappointing is the offensive line. I just think they've been inconsistent. If we, all the money and all they're healthy, they should be playing
well, they're
better.
Not. I mean, how big a loss is Stephen Neal? I mean, maybe
they're pretty much been healthy, though.
But they were up and down before Neal got hurt.
Yeah.
They weren't. I thought they'd be better, too. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Dan Copen, some people say he's a borderline Pro Bowler. You look at Steve Neal, a guy who's developed
Mankins
and gotten
is
very
supposed
good.
To be the best player in the world in
Mankins
his position.
A first round pick. Yeah. Matt Light, good, you know, middle of the road, probably upper half left tackle.
I thought that they'd be a team that when they want to run the ball, they can run the ball. And again, some teams they've been able to do that, but not consistently.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, why do you think they benched Ryan O'Callaghan, Tom?
I don't know. I guess now that Kazier is healthy, they feel like he's a better player at that position. I mean, he started out.
How's
playing
that
the right
for
side.
Some insight? I could ask Belichick that.
But, well, what else are you going to say?
O'Callaghan is a rookie. I think they feel.
What did he do wrong? It seemed to me that he was okay.
Kazier didn't do anything wrong, though. I'm saying is that now that Kazier is fully healthy, he's the better option at right tackle over O'Callaghan. Maybe if Kazier was as healthy as he is now at the beginning of the season, O'Callaghan doesn't even start the season.
Well, what
just asking?
You got anything else you want to
no.
talk about?
I'm just curious about it because I thought O'Callaghan was okay. Certainly nothing, you know.
But the question is,
right,
is Kazier
better? Okay. So
well,
maybe
I mean,
now
Kazier didn't look great the other night.
He didn't look that good.
I mean, he gave up that one interception. That was his guy who blew him back into Brady's lap, basically.
Yeah. No, and I don't know what's going on with Kazier, to be honest with you. I mean, he's here, he's not here, he's playing, he's not playing. So
now you're getting a little closer to it. Is it beyond just a shoulder?
Maybe.
Just a thought.
All right, let's see. Quiz for Tom. It's actually one question. Only one team in Division I college football has had a 100-yard rusher every game. Which team is that?
This year?
Michigan.
How about the guy last night?
Well, it's neither one of those. Neither Rutgers nor Michigan.
I thought it might be Hart. As a 100-yard rusher every game.
Only one team.
Oh, it's West Virginia.
No, Oklahoma.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
According to this emailer. So
it's a wild scene last night, huh?
Yeah.
I loved when they ran out.
I love that. That's my favorite part. It's one I can't stop talking about. It. I've never seen a crowd disperse. It's like someone shot a rifle in the air.
Well, Andy Hart had it. It was like bugs, and then someone sprayed something.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the bugs went
exactly.
the other way.
I've never – I mean, maybe people in Jersey just understand when it's time to get the bleep out.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, I have never seen a crowd – whoever was in charge of crowd control
it reminded
something
me of
right.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Run away! Run away!
I mean, I have never seen that before. I thought it would be a half hour for them to clear the field and get that final playoff.
Right here.
It's like in 2 minutes.
2 seconds.
I mean, that was impressive.
That was good.
Of course, you know, we have to be realistic. Rutgers fans aren't used to running on the field, so maybe they were just running around in circles.
James from Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. I know we are trying to move on this week to the Jets, but I sent this Wednesday, and I never heard it read, so I thought I'd send it again so I could hear your comments on it. I have two questions that occurred to me that will help us get a better handle on how the defense played and how you might view the outcome of the game if just a couple of things change. Question one. How many points do you predict the Colts would score before the game? I don't think any of you predicted anything below 20, and some even predicted the Colts would possibly score 30.
I predicted 34, and they should have scored at least 30.
Given the loss of Rodney.
Vinatieri missed two field goals. They were in the red zone about 150 times and couldn't score.
In that game, I thought 30 was the magic number on both sides. If the Pats hold the Colts under 30, they should win that game.
Right.
If they don't, it's over. So that's why I thought the game was a real disappointment. The Pats, you hold them to 27 with Harrison out the whole game.
I think that's going to be his point, but let's go on. Given the loss of Rodney, the penalties that helped continue drives, the five turnovers, and the magical completions by Manning, how can you say that the defense played that bad at all when the Colts did not score much more than most of you thought they would? Who's saying the defense played
I said
poorly?
The secondary played bad, and I thought they did.
Well, they played bad, but yet there were only two touchdown passes. I mean, if you ask Bill, that's going to be the bottom line.
But you know what the Colts' problem is? Is that when they play good teams like the Patriots, they can't run it inside the 10, and that's going to hurt them in the playoffs.
Right.
They run a die, he gets a yard, and then it's second and goal from the 8, and they have to throw the football.
Point is, no Rodney Harrison, two touchdown passes to Peyton Manning. I'll take that as a win.
Yeah.
I really will.
Question two, if Falk had caught that last ball from Brady
the 326 yards he rallied, you know, he tallied up during those
bleep
yards. You just go by touchdown passes?
Against the Colts? Yeah, let him have his yards. He's going to get his yards.
I thought the secondary didn't play well.
All right. If Falk had caught that last ball from Brady and they had went on to win the game in overtime, would your opinion on the Patriots' chances of winning the big games in the playoffs be different today? Does playing better at the end of the game on both sides of the ball forgive how bad you might have played earlier in the game? Bottom line, many of the Patriots' problems are fixable, and I am confident that they'll be playing much better come playoff time like every year.
0-6 against the Colts, Broncos, and Chargers the last 2 years. I didn't make that up.
No, that's true. It's something.
But whether they won or lost that Colts game, the emailer has a
five.
Point.
They'd be 1-5.
Well, no. Yeah, but my point is I feel the same way about the team. I still don't feel they're that far off from the Colts.
No, I don't either. I think if they play again, the Patriots have a very good chance of beating them. I'm just saying it's disappointing over the last 2 years that they keep losing to the better teams, and we can't keep making excuses for it. Sooner or later, they have to beat one of those teams.
I agree, Tom, and hopefully it'll be in the playoffs, because from now until the playoffs, chances are they won't be playing any better teams.
No, maybe Jacksonville at Jacksonville. You got the Bears coming in here, but that's the NFC. That's like the varsity playing the JV.
Right. Let's see. Brian says, this isn't meant to be read on the air, so I won't. Okay.
Why would someone send you an email not to be read on the air?
It's for Gary.
Can we go off the record?
It's for Gary. No, it's so that Gary has more sound effects.
Oh, Gary, please play a fart noise, but don't read this over the air.
Let's see. Marvin writes in, you guys are exactly right about the fans never showing any emotion. We were talking about that earlier.
And I want to know who cut the cheese.
I live in the heart of ACC country, and the Patriots fans remind me of the whiny UNC Tar Heel fans. They seem to think that is their birthright to win all the time. I like you think that we need to accept that the Pats are just not as good as we once were. The Colts game took me back to Super Bowl 36 against the Rams. We won thanks to our DBs jamming the Rams receivers at the line and knocking the snot out of them every time they tried to catch the ball. You and I both know we just don't have that kind of team anymore. That's why Tony D told Andrea Kramer at halftime, the Patriots know they have to outscore us. I think Belichick thought the same thing. He knew that our defense would not stop them. Obviously, the best way to stop the Colts is to keep the offense off the field. To me, this is why we must run the football to maintain possession. I also think Belichick has also missed several chances to build confidence in our rookie kicker by not letting him try field goals late in a couple games that we were already decided, like the fourth down pass play in Minnesota. Okay, I'm not buying that part.
It was obvious that Belichick knew they had to outscore him because he kept going for it on fourth down. I mean, he knew that he had to move the ball and score points on them, and that was evident from the early on in the game.
Well, Mike, we were talking earlier about how the Patriots fans, we believe, are just reactive fans. You know, they're not proactive. And I'm just sorry that you can't call yourself the best sports fans in Boston if you don't know when to yell at a football
game. Yeah.
Or just aren't willing to.
And they use, like, the it's the stadium. Pittsburgh has the same stadium, and they're loud at every game. You know what I mean?
I still think at the root of it is that we're just learning football. I really believe that. I mean, we are. I mean, when I say we, not in this room, although I am. But as a region, and we are. And I don't blame the region for not knowing football. Why would you ever invest your emotions and your and brain power to the Patriots up until 1994? I don't blame you for not following football, not knowing it. You shouldn't. But so it's a generational thing, Fred. I mean, I firmly believe, and this is one of my big rants, but I think in 10 years maybe, in another half generation, when the kids now who are 12 become 25, call it, this will be a football town, and they'll know when to cheer because these kids are growing up with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Like everyone else, our fathers grew up with Ted Williams, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a generational thing. Our fathers didn't need to follow the Patriots. There was no reason to follow the Patriots. When that generation gets
you
older,
you couldn't because they were never on
according
TV.
To Mike Felger.
It's going to flip. And that's true, too, right? I mean, if you had to watch anything, it was the Giants.
Right. According to Mike Felger, it takes 25 to 30 years to know that you need to be loud when the opposing offense has the ball.
It's not that hard.
I mean, that's right. That's marginalizing my opinion. But the big picture opinion of mine is that it's still a baseball town. And they'll cheer.
It's a Red Sox town.
It's a Red Sox town. But right. They understand when the Red Sox number 9 hitter bunts over a guy from first base. Not that it happens a lot, but they understand those nuances. I think the football nuances are still being ingrained.
Well, again,
Tom, the hardcores, there were plenty of hardcores out here who stood through the team through all those bad years. I think some of them have been weeded out. I mean, it has been gentrified here out in Foxborough by the prices and the nature of the kind of fans they want out here. Some of it's for the good. You can now bring your family to the game. But in so doing, maybe you've lost some of the hardcores, and there's more people who are more interested in eating the cheese up in the club section than watching a football
game. Kansas City is as nice a place to go, even if you're an opposing fan, as any place. I mean, they're just nice people.
Yeah, well,
they know what to do. You don't have to be mean. We're just saying get up and yell on third down.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to throw beer.
Yeah.
Just do that.
Yeah. But it's different. It's just that Midwest is – those sensibilities aren't here.
But I honestly think that they're spoiled to the point now where they think, like the emailer said, and we all thought it, when Vinatieri missed that field goal, there wasn't a person alive that didn't think the Patriots were going to go down and tie that game. And I think they believe that they're going to win every game no matter what, and they just feel it because they have Brady, they have Belichick, and they've done it so many times, now they've gotten spoiled.
Okay. I agree.
Because we all thought it. As soon as he misses that kick, it's overtime. God damn it, we're not going to get out of here until 7 o'clock in the morning now.
Let's see. Joe writes in. He says, I've been away for a long time. I've been to exotic ports of call. I was disappointed we couldn't resign Branch, but feel a number one pick next year was a steal for him. Your thoughts?
No. Well, I disagree.
Not right now, but someday we could be saying that.
I mean, let's put it this way.
You can't, you know.
If you draft a first-round receiver and he turns out to be Deion Branch, you feel like you've won?
Well, if
do you feel like that's been a productive pick?
If the guy,
Fred,
if the guy catches 60 balls next year and you win the Super Bowl, yes.
No. Don't give me that.
Why?
If you spend a number
one pick,
if you spend a number one pick on a receiver and that receiver turns out to be Deion Branch, do you consider that pick a success?
Yes, because
what's the It's yes, of course. He's a legit number one receiver in this league, worth the first round pick. So what you've done is traded away a known commodity for an unknown draft pick that, if it works out perfectly, will be Deion Branch.
Right.
You did and not
win. And I'm paying
that.
Less money for him, and I
you
can
have
build,
to pay him at some
and
point.
I, and I can build my team in other areas as well.
Oh well,
so
the
verdict is still out.
You save money for the look, 2 or 3 years until he gets good
look,
and productive
gotta,
like
then
Deion,
pay him.
And then you got to pay him.
Now, I can jerk my knee right now and say, "Oh my God, you know, I'd rather have Deion Branch right now than the first round pick."
It's not a knee jerk,
you know, but. But the fact is, what else could they have done?
Oh, I don't know, pay him. Just a thought.
Mike, let me ask you a question.
Crazy as that sounds,
I brought this up to Andy and Paul earlier. The Eagles drafted Reggie Brown last year, and just re-signed him to a bigger contract because they know he's someone they want in their fold. Right. That's the one criticism I have of the Patriots. They can get – see, you keep saying, Fred, well, they what could they have done now? But they could have done things earlier to take care of it with
everybody
Givens,
knew.
With Branch. They could do things early on like they did with Copen here. Get it done now. You know, don't let them.
So it's not against their principle to do things early on.
Well, no, but see, Copen's different. Copen was in the same spot as Deion Branch. Deion Branch was under contract this year. Jarvis Green had one more year to go.
Was Brady different?
Brady was
Seymour
different.
Different.
Brady and Seymour were different.
All these guys had time.
They had multiple years to go.
All these guys had, you know, and they had a deal out to Branch before with multiple years.
And
left.
It was obviously garbage.
No, the problem was the
what
year.
Do you mean, no?
The problem was the structure. They
Yes. And what is structure equal?
No, I'm talking about the years. They wanted to tear up the deal and start from day one. Because they wanted to turn that five-year deal into a four-year deal.
Okay.
And the Patriots didn't want to do that based on principle. It had less to do with money.
Oh, the stink of that bullcrap right there.
It had less to do with money than it had to do with egos.
Oh, my God. You know what millions of dollars next to principle is? Principle, you know, principle can kiss my ass. It's all about the money that you have to pay to these guys up front. Don't give me that.
Well,
they didn't think he was worth the money. They didn't want to pay him the money. Fine. They made that decision.
They had a deal out there that was worth over $6 million a year or something like that. I forget what it was.
Fred,
you know,
do you think the Patriots' offer was as good as Seattle's?
Absolutely not.
Do you think it was anywhere close?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay, well, it wasn't. Don't kid yourself. Don't get caught into principle and this and that.
Because Jonathan Kraft, who was on your show, said that over the next 3 or 4 years, Branch will be the highest paid receiver in the league.
Exactly.
So it couldn't have been anywhere close.
Oh, do you think he's worth that?
No.
No, but that's the reality.
Should the Patriots have paid that?
Fred, yes.
They should pay him as the highest paid receiver in the NFL.
Because I'll tell you what, he's at right now, but wait till this next free agent class comes. The nature of it now is there's so much cap dollars out there, Fred, because of the new CBA. Anyone who signs any contract is going to be way overpaid. If you don't want to overpay.
Okay. Well, I guess then Dave Wallabaugh at the time should have been the highest paid.
Go to the EFL.
What's his name?
The different culture.
Who went to Detroit.
Different climate.
Well, okay. You just can't do it all the time, Mike. All right.
We're in a break.
Doug, you're
good to go. Hey. I'm going to split this up into two, so I'm just going to go to break in the middle of it. In 3, 2, and it is the Mike Felger Show, 890 ESPN, Patriots Friday, live at Gillette Stadium, as promised. We got a twofer right here, Matt Light. Troy Brown together in studio as one. How you fellas doing? You enjoy yourself today out of practice?
It was a good day. It was nice weather. So that made it a good day by itself.
Do you want me to out you, Troy, in what you're wearing right now, or just should I just not mention it?
You can not mention it.
You guys, how does it feel coming off those two night games? Two night, primetime games. Is it different now? Do you prefer the Sunday one? Does it feel like that routine is better for you?
At this point in my career, I prefer the 1 o'clock game, so I can go ahead and get home and get into bed and get some rest for the next day. So, I mean, the worst games are the road games on Monday nights. Those are absolutely the worst. Get back here at 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, and your day's already done by the time you get up. So, it's just I prefer the 1 o'clock games.
You over the Colts game yet, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, we're moving on. I mean, you kind of have to. I mean, it's not something you can dwell on. Obviously, we came in Monday and looked at all the film and made the corrections. And, I mean, that's a terrible feeling to lose a game at home and lose a game, you know, obviously to the Colts when we knew that there was a lot riding on that one. But, you know, hey, we got to get back to work and get ready for the Jets who are playing great football and get ready to, you know, play another great team here at home.
Just spend a few minutes on the Colts game because everyone's still talking about it. I mean, it was the game of the year in the NFL, according to a lot of people. Do you think you're that far away from the Colts as a team? You think you're as good as the Colts?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to really sit here and analyze something that happened last week. I mean, the only thing I'll say about the entire game was, you know, when you make a lot of mistakes and you have a lot of turnovers and you don't do the things that you need to do, you're not going to win a game. And that goes for any game, whether it's a big game or, you know, the game that everybody thinks you should win. You know, if you don't do the right things and put yourself in good position and play a smart, tough game, you probably won't win many in this league.
Matt, was it a disappointment to the offensive line that you didn't run the football as much in the second half as you did in the first?
I never question play calling.
Do you enjoy? Well, I mean, we've talked about it before. Every offensive lineman enjoys running the football more. I mean, did you feel you were having success running the ball?
Sure. We had some success running the ball. We also, you know, probably had a handful in there. I wish we could have back, but you know, I mean, that game, you know, it is what it is, and you know, we did what we had to do, and you know, as far as you know, what plays were called and stuff, we just didn't make it work.
Had to be frustrating, Troy. But one of the hallmarks of this team is that you guys don't sort of dwell on that. 57 straight without back-to-back losses. That says something about your team just beyond talent. I mean, it says that you don't dwell on the bad things, or you don't let the frustrations build. You don't let mistakes compound themselves. What is it about this team that?
I think it's just been an ability to focus on the future and just that game that happened on Sunday night. We happened on Sunday, and you come in Monday and you watch the film on it and you see what you did wrong, see what you did right, and you put it behind you. You got third, you got Tuesday to kind of start getting ready for the next opponent, and in this case it's the Jets, and you start focusing on them and focusing on doing the things right against them and what you're going to do against them to win the game. And I think just our leadership in general, from the head coach on down, you know, kind of transcends it through everybody else, and we just go out and play our game the next week and just forget about the bad things that happened the last week and don't let it snowball and end up being two losses in a row. So,
is that challenging, Troy? Is it challenging not to let those frustrations build? Because it's only human nature to, when you suffer a bad loss or have a bad day at all, to not let it carry over.
Well, I mean, yeah, you can say we are human. You know, we get frustrated, we get upset sometimes, but it's how you channel it. But I think we do a good job. The guys on this team don't really show it outwardly, and when they do, you know, we get it under control pretty quickly, and you know, and not letting this thing snowball. You know, that's how I think bad things start to happen consecutively. Like last week in the game, I mean, even though it did kind of snowball on us, you know, and you can get a little frustrated with that type of stuff, but you got to deal with it. I thought we did a good job of dealing with it, but we just didn't make enough plays to be able to overcome some of the mistakes we made. And, you know, in that last drive there, you know, we had a chance to win it still with all the mistakes we had. And, you know, so, I mean, it just things just happen. Bad things happen during the course of a game, and we couldn't control that.
And I don't think anybody gets anywhere when they dwell on the negative. You know, I don't care if you're playing football or if you're, you know, the CEO of a big company. I mean, if you're dwelling on the negative side of everything, you know, number one, you're going to be miserable. But number two, you're going to miss the obvious that you know, you got to correct these issues. So I think if you look at it from the standpoint that you had to continually improve week to week, everybody knows that. I mean, if you don't, everyone else will, you'll be lost. And you can't continually improve if you're only looking at the negative and oh man, I wish I would have done this better. I wish I would have done that. No, you know, look at the film, get the corrections, find out what you did wrong. You know, work on those things throughout the week and get ready for your next opponent. That's the only way you can move on from a loss.
You know, I find that interesting too, and walking that line, the whole psychology of that, Matt, because also you've got to take your mistakes seriously. I mean, you can't be one of these guys, you know, in any walk of life that says, you know what, I didn't get it. I'll get it the next time. Whatever. It is what it is. You know, you've got to sort of address it in a hard way and say, that wasn't good enough, what do I do to correct it? But then if you go over that line and you dwell on it, you become miserable. It's like a balance, I'd have to imagine.
Yeah, well, I think that's what everybody, you know, that has been in the system long enough and that understands, you know, their role and what they need to do. I think that's where experience comes into play. And, you know, I mean, I guess if you have a young team and they're not used to dealing with the adversity and the up and down, the way the season goes in the NFL, it can be a little bit tougher. But, you know, we've got guys here that are experienced, that have been in big games, that have been a part of a roller coaster that makes up the NFL season. And, you know, I'm sure Troy will tell you, over all the years that he's been playing, you know, there's, you know, that this system obviously works, and the way that we approach things work, and, you know, how hard all these guys, you know, work every week to get better. I mean, it's proven itself to be successful around here.
It's Matt Light and Troy Brown on 890 ESPN and the Mike Felger Show, Patriots Friday. Is it hard to excuse turnovers or sort of put turnovers aside? Because I hear a lot of people say it. Oh, they were right with that team if it weren't for the turnovers. Yeah, you don't turn the ball over five times, you're going to win the game. But yet, I think the turnovers have got to be a sign of you not playing well. I mean, you see what
those,
I'm saying?
Those
Troy?
Are all major stats in the outcome of games. I mean, there's been studies done on it. So the major stats are turnovers, you know, third down conversions and third down stops, however you want to look at it, and whoever can win most of the time in the special teams battle. I mean, it's a major stat in the outcome of games. So definitely, you know, I mean, you can't really say if because they did happen. And, you know, part of being a good team and playing well on that particular day is winning the turnover battle and winning the battle on third down. So and we didn't do that Sunday night, and we lost the game.
Is there something about that Sunday night NBC game you guys don't like? I mean, those are your two worst games.
Yeah, it's been bad. I mean, it's been our two losses, you know, and you can pull a lot of bad players out of there. And like I said, that could have happened, you know, on any Sunday, but it just happened on that Sunday night. So we're not going to get into the jinx thing about the Sunday night games, you know. But, you know, we played in primetime games before and done pretty well, but the last couple hadn't come out in our favor.
Matt, look ahead to the New York Jets. Did you learn anything from that first timeout?
Yeah. I mean, you learn a lot every time you play a team. And you know, I think that they're doing, you know, pretty much what they've always done, you know, within their system. And I think they're getting a lot better. Not that they were bad before, but I think that they've definitely they've all bought into that, and they all play it pretty well. I mean, that's obviously a very technique-oriented front with the linebackers and everyone else being able to play off each other and, you know, use their two-gap responsibility pretty well. And it's tough. You know, it presents a different challenge than when you face a team that plays a 4-3, you know, one-gap style penetrating just like the Colts, you know, even to an extent like Minnesota. But it's definitely something that we've seen. And having our own guys go out there and give us some looks, it obviously helps us out. But it's going to be a different game than what you've seen in the past.
Well, Eric Mangini, obviously with that new defense down there in New York, and it is the Belichick 3-4, the two-gapping that you mentioned. Do you feel that all the times you faced your own defense here in practice helped you for that Jets game? Is it very similar to that?
Well, like I said, they're going to give us great looks, and they know how to play the technique. And, you know, those guys over there do a great job. I mean, Ellis is, you know, obviously he's a great player, and he's playing well within that system. And, you know, getting Chemo over from Pittsburgh, who's a two-technique specialist, you know, he's a two-gap specialist. So he knows how to play that. And, you know, the guys inside that are playing well. So it presents different challenges, and obviously we've had to work all week this week to get ready for that.
Does Bobby Hamilton play a lot for them? Does he get in?
Bobby's in there quite a bit. And, you know, he subs and rotates either side. And, you know, obviously we've seen Bobby over the years.
That was a good guy. I like Bobby Hamilton.
Bobby's a good dude. No complaints.
And, you know, you sort of you can see why Eric would bring him in, knowing the system, but also locker room presence. I mean, that was talk about Bobby Hamilton for a little bit on this roster, Troy. You know, was he one of those guys that helped instill Belichick's system?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he knew the system. They brought him in from the Jets to here, you know, to help us out on the defensive line. And I thought he did a pretty good job. And, you know, and Bobby's one of those guys in the locker room that everybody liked. He was loud and funny guy, and you knew when he was around. So he was definitely good in the locker room with the guys, too, on and off the field. And he was always animated on the field, too, when he makes a play. When somebody else makes a play, he's always getting fired up and keeping other guys fired up and into the game. And he's always, you know, trying to give other guys pointers and tips, you know, on that game, too, on the field. So he was definitely a helpful hand in our locker room.
Yeah, also Matt Chatham down there, Tim Dwight down there. You know, so important for these coaches to bring players that know what they're doing, have been with that coach before. Can you see that, I don't know, on the Jets when you played them or as you watched them on film, sort of a little bit of the stamp that you're familiar with here in New England?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what's going on down there right now, but I know if I was the head coach, I would try to bring in guys I was familiar with also, and guys that I've coached, because they know what you want, you know, and they can kind of, you know, feed it to the other players as much. I mean, the way you can get it to them. So, I mean, that's what I would do. I would bring in as many guys as possible that's played for me or that I've coached with in the past. So, I mean, and he obviously got his staff set up the way he wants it set up. And like you said, they're playing better and better every week. And, you know, it takes a little time when you're a new coach and you got their players are learning their coach pretty well and pretty well and knows what he wants out of them, and they're giving it to him.
Troy, you done taunting?
I don't think I ever started.
Are you done throwing the football into your opponent's face?
I don't think I ever started, so you might see me carrying the ball over, you know, this week. So,
all right, Troy Brown, thanks for stopping by. Take a quick break. Come back with Matt Light. It is Patriots Friday on 890 ESPN. Going in three. They said they wanted me to do one more short segment with Matt, and so you can go if you want, Troy.
I'm on the
shove off.
I'll hold the fort down. Don't worry. I'll try to make it without you.
I didn't out you with the blue jersey.
Getting along Thanks, very well.
There you go. Right.
I'm getting along very well, Troy, without you in this studio.
In 3, 2, and it is 890 ESPN, the Mike Felger Show. Patriots Friday at Gillette Stadium. Matt Light, Patriots left tackle, joining me, Matt. Big play last time you faced the New York Jets was that 11-up blitz. They got Tom on one of those. Was it the safety Rhodes coming off the outside there?
Think so.
Okay. What do you do this time around to combat that?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously we have a good game plan. I mean, we feel we have a great game plan to attack that. It's just a matter of whether they dial it up or not. You know, and you know, they've shown it quite a few times throughout the season so far, and they're not always bringing it. You know, sometimes it's just to get it up there and bait you into it. And, you know, sometimes they bring it, and they're pretty good at it. So, you know, it all comes down to everybody being on the same page, communication, and, you know, receivers and quarterback all – you know, doing the right thing, and I'm sure that that's what's going to happen if we see that look.
Do you guys have confidence when teams split you? I know Brady's expressed that in the past. He's I want it to come because then he can read it quicker, read it more clearly, who's coming, where the openings are going to be, and he's always been confident in the past that if you blitz him, he's going to beat you.
Well, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that we're going to pick up every blitz known to man, but, you know, if they're going to do the things that they do and things that we work on, I feel like, you know, we put a lot of work every week into the looks and, you know, what to expect and if they do this and if they do that. And hopefully we're well prepared. And I think they always, you know, the coaches do a great job of getting us prepared. And if we all take it to heart as players and, you know, we make the play when it comes up, yeah, I think that, you know, we're pretty effective in blocking a lot of the blitzing. But that's not to say that there's not going to be a wrinkle out there that we're not used to or we haven't seen. I'm sure that that can happen, and I'm sure with 2 weeks of preparation and, you know, a bye week for the Jets that they've come up with a lot of creative ways to attack us.
Do you have a favorite play, favorite kind of play?
No, I really don't. You know, I mean, I like plays that work. I like plays that gain yards, and, you know, whether that has me at the point of attack or the backside or, you know, bluffing this or doing that, I mean, I really don't care, you know. I mean, I'm just in there to – you know, I got my responsibility, and as long as I lock that up and we gain yardage, good to go.
Well, can I offer a suggestion that would, if I were a guy like you, a play I would like is those wide receiver screens that you sometimes run where you're going to throw it out to the receiver and you're flaring out on a corner or an outside linebacker and you're sort of hitting them from an angle where they may not be seeing you. It seems like a pretty good free shot. You get to hit a little guy, and that to me would seem to be all good.
That's a fun play. Yeah, and you know, those plays have a short shelf life. You know, you can't run those all the time. That's not going to be a back-to-back style play, but you know, those are fun for offensive linemen. It's fun for a tackle to be able to run out in space and, you know, like a pig on ice trying to pair up with one of those little guys. But, you know, I'll tell you, the tackle eligible, I think it's just a matter of time. People see, you know, my threat out there on the edge, or, you know, maybe get me the ball, you know,
it's a great point. And yeah. Matt, I've been to every single one of your games as an NFL player.
Yeah.
Preseason, regular season, postseason.
Yeah.
I have yet to see you be declared as an eligible receiver. I have yet to see you run a pattern as a tackle eligible.
You always save your best for the last.
Have you? Did I miss anything?
No, of course. No. I mean, we're obviously going to keep that. And that's the one that we don't want to talk about a lot. We're going to sneak it in there one of these days. But, you know, I kind of thought that I showcased my ability to pick up a ball and run with it in a Monday night game when we had that ball come loose. And I don't know if you saw it. It didn't look like much. I mean, it looked like it only took like two steps and then got totally blown up by by the big man inside there. You know, Williams. But I tell you, what you didn't see was, and the cameras can't capture it because I'm so quick, is that I spun once, and then I cut to my left, back to my right, and I gained like 2.5 yards, and then he hit me. But, you know, all you guys probably saw was me pick up the ball and get trucked.
Well, and, I mean, you are a former tight end. It's like
sure
you never touched
right.
the football.
I caught one ball for 17 yards, deep drag route.
At Purdue, right?
At Purdue. It was thrown by Rick Tresker, and it was kind of like a grenade. I caught it. You know, it was behind me. I turned and ran over a few guys and then fell to the ground. But, yeah, that's my one highlight of my career.
You know, talk about fun plays, and it's Matt Light here on 890 ESPN. The tight ends have got to love that wham play that you do so often. And it's a sort of a similar thing to the wide receiver screen for you where you get to hit a guy on an angle, maybe not seeing where it's coming from. It's sort of a free shot if it times out right. It's a good play for you guys. Why do you think it's been so successful?
Well, I mean, I think it's just one of those misdirection. I don't know if it's misdirection, but it's one of those plays that kind of catches people off guard. And, You know, it's kind of a downhill play. I mean, not always. I mean, that's one of those plays that can kind of go anywhere, but it's designed to go one place. But you never really know how it's going to all unfold, and you know they can move around up front. So it's not the easiest play in the world to block. But if you do it right and you're effective with it, and you sneak it in there at times, and you know it's a pretty good play. I wouldn't say it's the greatest play on earth.
Well, is it really meant for those gap splitting kind of defenses like Indy? Then maybe the two gapping you're going to see here at the Jets, sort of harder to get a guy out of his lane when you play a two-gap team?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I honestly can't tell you exactly why that play's dialed up. I never have really questioned that before. But, you know, they sneak it in there, and we run it every now and then. And, you know, it is obviously part of our offense and something that, you know, the opponents have to practice for.
It's Matt Light here on 890 ESPN and Patriots Friday. You happy to get back to the AFC East this week? You like these division games? You like playing a team so much so you know them so well. Is that comfortable or is that boring?
No, you know, it makes the week a little bit more familiar. You know, it's not – there's not so many foreign things that you have to kind of get ready for and try to learn a guy. I mean, you know, a lot of these guys we played, you know, a lot in the past. And, you know, obviously playing against Kemo, we've seen him a lot in the last years too. So even with the different – guys that they put out there on defense, we're pretty familiar with them. I think now it just comes down to, you know, there's so much more weight on a division game that, you know, you almost have to prepare even more, in a sense that, you know, we lose this one, it's a different picture, you know, in our division. We win this one and it looks pretty good.
You guys have become dominant in this division. Are you aware of that?
Well, I know. I think we perform pretty well. I think you could say that.
I mean, it just feels like the whole, like every other program in the division is chasing. And it must have been what the Niners felt like in the 80s. Because, you know, since you've been here, Matt, you've had one coach, one system, one program. I think the Jets have had three or two at least. The Bills have had three. The Dolphins have had two. Like they've gone through coaches, quarterbacks, programs, and you guys are still the same. That's got to be just right then and there, you know, alone a big advantage.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, the only way you keep a staff or, you know, coaches around is by having success. And we've had success here. And, you know, but I'll tell you, man, it's a dogfight. It doesn't matter, you know, what people say in the media or how you feel about particular players on that field. Whenever we play a divisional game, it is 100 mile an hour. And you never really know what to expect. Yeah, but you know it's going to be a game. You know it's going to go 60 minutes.
Have you guys outgrown division championships? Does that even feel good? For example, the 0-1, you win the division title. I remember the hats, the T-shirts, pretty good celebration in the locker room. I think last year when you did it, I don't remember a damn thing. I mean, have you outgrown division titles?
I certainly hope not. I don't think anybody in that room could say that. I mean, obviously it's a free hat and a free T-shirt, and those are great. I live for those moments, actually. I got a whole closet full of free hats and T-shirts. But you know what it is? It's a good feeling because you know that you're at least in position to make a run at it. You know, I mean, there's a lot of teams, you know, that would love to say that they're the divisional champ. There's only one, right? So, yeah, it's a great feeling. You can never overlook something like that.
You know what? We've gotten spoiled, Matt, because we all look at a division title. You guys are going to win it this year. When you win it, it's going to be ho-hum. What's next? What's up? You know, when's that divisional game against Denver or Indy? Or where's the next Super Bowl? And 80% of the NFL would just be thrilled to win a division. I mean, really, on a consistent basis like you guys have. I mean, is it hard not to get sucked into that mentality?
No, I mean, we are thrilled to win them, you know. I mean, and if we can go out there and win it this year, that's, you know, that's one of our goals, you know, obviously on the way to, you know, the end all, and that's the Super Bowl. So, you know, I tell you, you never get tired of success, you know. You never get complacent with it. Because it takes so much to get there. It takes so much work to have a winning season in the NFL that you know, you love every minute of it.
Are you aware of your back-to-back streak?
No, I never really know the statistics involved with the game.
57 straight, Matt. Last time you lost back-to-back games was 2002. That's nearly 4 years ago. I think that's pretty good.
You know, somebody wasted like 9 hours of their life compiling all that information.
But it's a good nugget of information, right, I think, Matt. Right. I think it speaks to something on the team.
Yeah, well, every day's a new day, right?
Okay. Well, thanks for stopping by once again. Good luck on Sunday, Matt. We appreciate it.
All right, we'll see you.
All right, Matt Light on 890 ESPN. We'll get to your phone calls at 1-866-ESPN-890, 1-866-377-6890. It's the Mike Felger Show, 890 ESPN.